It's time to go back in time.
Hi there.
Welcome to McMahon's Pastry Palace.
I've heard good things about your bake shop, so I thought I would...
It's called Pastry Palace.
Yes, I know that. I was just... You know, this is a bake shop.
No. A bake shop is what my dad used to run. This is a pastry palace.
Okay, right. Well, I just...
This is pure pastry entertainment.
Right. Hey, what's that?
Oh, well, that's our special feast incarnate. Double chocolate F5 layer cake. But I'm sorry, we only serve that 4 times a year.
Oh, all right then. Well, I'll have a piece of the Brian fudge cake, please.
The Brian fudge cake, huh? A decent, if not unspectacular choice. I've got something even better. How would you like to try the Samoan caramel twist?
No thanks. I think I'm going to stick with the Brian fudge cake.
Come on, pal. No one really likes the Brian fudge cake. And the portion is way too small.
Look, I'm sure the Samoan cake is perfectly fine. In fact, I might even come back and have it next week. But I really just want the Brian fudge cake, okay?
Now look here, you lazy millennial son of a bitch. You're gonna like this damn Samoan cake because I know what's good for you, damn it!
Screw you! I don't want any of your Samoan cake. In fact, I hate Samoan cake. I'd rather eat dog shit.
Get out of my shop!
Don't tell me what to do.
Get the hell out of my shop!
The moral of the story, kids, is that it's not the cake's fault that the chef is an asshole.
I heard that.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the streak!
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat! You haven't been beat up properly! Woo!
Welcome to the 9-Year Anniversary Podcast, episode 468 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, November 6th. 2016, I am the Solid Monster, and I was trying to figure out, you know, what do I want to use for an intro? I was kind of listening to some of the older ones, and there's been a lot of great ones, a lot of really funny ones. I think that one, though, still stands head and shoulders above the rest as my personal favorite, and I got to give a lot of credit to Noah Mark for helping out with that one. That was McMahon's Pastry Palace from, I want to say episode 367, I should probably know this. So I said, let's go back in time and play one of my favorite, actually my favorite intro. So it sounds as cool today as it did when we first used it. I want to thank everybody first and foremost. I got a lot of thank yous here. All of you, obviously, for listening and for sticking with me for so many years. I know we have a lot of people listening since day one, which just blows my mind. Blows my mind how you could still be watching wrestling, let alone listening to this podcast. But thank you to everybody. Thank you to Webmaster Mike from SE Scoops. If you remember, that's where the Sound Off started. Our original home was SEScoops.com back in the day. And I want to thank him for all his help and support over the years. And, of course, Noah Mark, who I just mentioned, who has been tremendously helpful on the a lot of the intros that you've heard. And when we do the shows on the road, whether it was the Rumble one earlier this year, we were at SiriusXM over SummerSlam weekend. We'll be in Orlando for WrestleMania next year. Brian Blade, he's part of the gang as well. TV Tracks, who's been very supportive over the years. He's a big fan of the podcast and continues to post clips on his very popular channel if you want to give him a subscribe. And just a bunch of other people. I can't possibly name everybody. So this has been a great fun ride for me. And here's to 9 more years of the Sound Off. I also want to say congrats to the Chicago Cubs and the Cubs fans. I got to give them props. I didn't think they'd pull it off, but they did it. And not only did they do it, but I have to say that was probably the most exciting Game 7 I've ever seen. That was an unfrickin' believable game on, I guess, what was it, Sunday night? And the Cubs win the World Series, first title in 108 years. That is quite the streak, quite the losing streak that they were on. And they are losers no more, so congrats to them and their fans. If you would like to get yourself a free copy of The Death of WCW, you can do so using our Audible link, audibletrial.com/Solid Monster. It's still good through the end of the year. You still got time left to sign up. Get yourself a 30-day trial of the Audible service. You use our link. Go ahead and sign up. 30 days, they will not bill you. You get to cash in one free audio book in sampling the service. And even if you do cancel your trial and you don't end up paying for a longer subscription, that one free book that you cashed in on belongs to you. You get to keep it forever and a day. So whether it's The Death of WCW or some other book, it's entirely up to you. But use our link to do so, because when you do, you are supporting this podcast. So audibletrial.com/Solomonster is always the link for that. And if you want to make a PayPal donation, as always, thesolomonster.com, right-hand side, that is the place to do so. Our PayPal VIPs every single week keeping the show going, I really appreciate it. I want to say thank you to John Loose Cannon Lopez, Chuck Lunatic Lentz, Deadpool James Herrera, Tamu the Tyrant Asakanen, who wants to give a shout-out to the blogging platform steemit.com. That's S-T-E-E-M-I-T.com. It's free to use. Allows bloggers to earn money based on other people liking their content. It's in beta right now. New features are being added. You can check out the FAQ section there. So if you like to write about pro wrestling, that might be the platform for you to do so. Out of Control Cody Thomas, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Dastardly Derek Smith, Alvin Chainsaw Siegerts, Nemesis Nathan Moyers, Kind of a Big Deal Corey Blake, The Boss Carlos Torrens, Massgrave Micah Harshaw, Jimmy the Mailman Milstead, The Montreal Mauler Patrick Pacheco, the one and only Ocampo, who's celebrating a birthday along with his dad, Juan El Burrito Ocampo, a senior. And that was his choice, by the way. Don't come at me here. He suggested that name for his dad. As well as his brother, Joshu, or Josu, I think, El Piche, Maricon Ocampo, November 3rd, November 6th, and November 9th, respectively, are their birthdays. That's tough to pull off. It's very impressive. So happy birthday to all of them. Christian Combat Reyes, who has a YouTube channel you could check out. Username is cbars82. The Arsonist, Tim Tapp. Happy belated birthday. Tim is part of a not-for-profit team called 7-Star Reanimate, which reanimated shot for shot an episode of the original Dragon Ball. Over 250 artists from around the world came together, and each shot is done by a different artist. That's pretty cool. You can check them out at facebook.com/7reanimate and on Tumblr at 7reanimate.tumblr.com. The Scottish Assassin, Colin Kayer, thank you for your donation. Colin is running a 5K along with his wife for a charity called Saying Goodbye on November 13th. They perform remembrance services at cathedrals all over the UK for couples that have lost a child during pregnancy or they were stillborn. So he and his wife have been through that themselves. Unfortunately, they are very supportive of what this charity does. They've set up a donation page for anybody who would like to contribute. They're already at 96% of their goal, last I checked. So you can help them get to 100. Go to justgiving.com/fundraising/SarahColinKayer. It's all one word, and Kayer is K-E-I-R. So thank you to everybody who donated this week. I don't think I mentioned it earlier. $10 or more, you get a shout-out. $30 or more, you can get a shout-out and a quick plug for what have you. And you guys keep this machine going here. So let's get into it here, because there is a lot to get to. Although I will say right off the bat, I so busy this week. I still have not watched NXT. I am aware of what happened. I went and I read the results, but I have not yet watched NXT. The only part of NXT I saw, I did see the very beginning where they were kind of throwing to footage. I like it when they do that. That's kind of cool. I guess they filmed some matches on the road, I think on the West Coast. So there were some results that are relevant to the Dusty Classic. I'll talk about that later. But I just didn't have time. But what we do have time for, the big reveal later in the show, it is the final entry in my countdown of the top 9 greatest promos/interviews in WWE history. I timed it to coincide with our 9-year anniversary. See, very clever. 9 weeks this countdown has been running. And finally, the number one greatest promo of all time will be revealed. And there's been a lot of guessing going on. I mean, a lot of you guys on Twitter and Facebook have been sending me comments. I think it's this. I think it may be that. You guys have been trying to guess. A lot, you know, a lot of you were surprised to see the Ric Flair 1992 Rumble promo last week among all the honorable mentions. I think a lot of you thought it would be number one, but it was not. I swerved you. I will say, more people have guessed it than I thought. I've been seeing a lot of your feedback, and I did not expect this many people to accurately guess what number one is, but a lot of you have. So I will reveal that later on in the show. And also, for those of you who are interested, in case you forgot, there's something kind of important going on this Tuesday. I will give my prediction for the election this Tuesday. We'll do that at the end of the show. Hell in a Cell was last Sunday. My thoughts are up on YouTube. I have a full half-hour plus review of the Hell in a Cell show as a sound-off extra on our YouTube channel. The Solomonster, all one word, is my username on YouTube. If you're not already subscribed, you should be. Shame on you. So head on up there and check it out. I also want to say thank you to everybody who downloaded the SE Scoops app and listened to the show in those first 24 hours before it hit YouTube. I know a lot of you did. Good feedback to the app, too. It's I have it on my phone. You should, too. It's free. Why not? So give it a look if you haven't already downloaded it. I thought Roman Reigns and Rusev had a real good match to open the show, and they probably benefited by being the opening match. You generally have a hotter crowd. It's the first big match of the night. People are usually up for it. So I think that probably helped. But these guys beat the hell out of each other. Props to them. They had a good match, despite Rusev hitting Roman Reigns in the chest with a kendo stick while he was wearing a protective vest and not bothering to rip it off. I thought that was stupid. Owens and Rollins, Universal Championship match mid-show, had, in my opinion, the match of the night. I know some of you will disagree, but I don't care. That was the match of the night. I was really happy to see them give Charlotte and Sasha the chance to tear it up in the main event. You know, I said weeks ago, what do you got to lose? Put them in the main event. It's probably the most promoted match anyway of the show. The babyface champion is coming in. It's her hometown. And then I got the news just as I was recording last week and doing my predictions that they, in fact, were going to be going on last. And I was very happy to hear that. They worked their asses off. I thought the match started out like any hot WWE pay-per-view main event, right? I mean, you had these two women in the ring. The cage is slowly being lowered. Charlotte attacks Sasha. They briefly tease that the cage is going to come down on top of Sasha. It reminded me of that the match at the King of the Ring in 98 that Austin and Kane had as a First Blood match, but the cell was still up from the previous match. And all of a sudden, somebody starts to lower the cell, and Austin's laying there, and it's like, oh my God, it's going to crush Steve Austin. So that's kind of what it reminded me of. But then they brawled into the crowd. I mean, they were doing some wild stuff that we hadn't seen in the previous matches. And I'm like, all right, this is cool. We're getting off to a hot start here. And it kind of tapered off. It was kind of downhill from there. And I don't say downhill like it was the match was total shit or anything like that. But it never really hit that high again. And there were a few flubs here and there. And just some of the things they did, it really kind of took the crowd out of it. And then that finish was just very flat. That finish didn't help. I don't know what they were thinking, to be honest, if they knew that was the plan. And I've read that originally Sasha was going to win. Vince changed his mind the night before. I don't know. I don't know what goes through the guy's head. But, you know, what do I do? Do I sit here and I say, well, shame on them for putting that match on last if they knew that Sasha wasn't going to win? Then I'm a hypocrite because I sat here for weeks saying that they should put them on last. And I think they should have. And I'm happy they did. But that finish didn't help. I didn't love the match the way a lot of you guys seem to. Some of you hated it. Some of you thought it was absolute garbage. I don't agree with that. But some of you loved it and thought it was the match of the night. I didn't. But it doesn't mean I wouldn't want to see them get another shot at it. It was not the match that I was hoping for. Now, that said, according to Michael Hayes on his Twitter page, all three Hell in a Cell matches killed it. And anyone who says differently is stupid. That's what Michael Hayes said. That's straight from a WWE executive, in case you were wondering what the company thinks of you. Gawker reached a settlement with Hulk Hogan this week, said to be $31 million, plus I think Hogan gets a portion of the sale of Gawker to Univision, I guess it was. So after fees and everything, who the hell knows what Hogan will actually end up with. I'm sure it'll be more than enough to live off of for the rest of his life. He won a $140 million judgment against them in court. It was being appealed, or it was going to be appealed. And there was always the chance that it would get thrown out or reverse, whatever. So it was probably the smartest thing for everybody involved to do, was to reach some sort of settlement for Hogan to get the guaranteed money and just run. I would think it won't be long before we see Hogan back on WWE television. You know, they've already incorporated his voice back into some of those network commercials. I'd pose this question to anyone listening who was offended by the comments that he made on that tape. And really, it should offend everybody when you hear stuff like that. But anybody who heard that and was really like personally hurt and offended by it, it's been 16 months since that tape leaked, since WWE fired Hulk Hogan. He's still off the Hall of Fame page. I mean, you could say he's out of the Hall of Fame. What does that even mean? There is no physical Hall of Fame. But he's not anywhere on the website still. They haven't added him back yet. I suspect they will, but they haven't. Are you okay? Are you cool with WWE bringing Hogan back in some sort of role or reestablishing a relationship, maybe just for the sake of the network, with Hulk Hogan? That would be my... I'm curious. Maybe he's been forgiven by a large portion of you. Maybe a lot of you still say F him and never want to see him again. I really don't know where people stand, and I'm kind of curious. Do you think they need to keep their distance maybe just a little bit longer? You know, keep him out of the picture for another, what, year, 2 years? I mean, I don't know. Is there a magic number? Or do you think they should just never do business with him again? Myself, you know, to me, the embarrassment of what he said on that tape and the fact that he said it in reference to his own daughter. I mean, to me, I don't know. That's just so gross. To say that, about your own daughter, you know, like, I hope she marries some, whatever it was. I forgot the exact words he used, but it's just gross. No WWE comeback, even if they do bring him back, can ever erase that. That will always be there. That will be with him until the day he dies. But I go back to what I said when I first talked about this whole thing last year, and you can find the video online, you know, even on our own YouTube channel. I took the whole segment, 30-some-odd minutes. I talked about this. So long as WWE insists on, you know, canonizing the Ultimate Warrior and making him out to be like he's some sort of saint, given all the hateful things that he said about people, to put him in their Hall of Fame and to name an award after him and to build a statue for him while at the same time acting like Hogan never even existed is just the height of hypocrisy. There's just no way around it. And I just continue to shake my head at that. You know, that some rules apply for some and not for others. And Hogan and Warrior, they're on the same platform. It's not like, well, Hogan was never a big star. Hogan's probably the biggest star of all time. Hogan was no schlub. So to treat him one way and Warrior another way, just because he died. But let's be honest, even before the Warrior died, they decided to bring him back. They were going to build a statue and do all this stuff. So it's not like just because he died, they decided to honor him. They said, look, time heals all wounds. This guy's got some drawing power. We want to put him in the Hall of Fame. We can make merchandise and make little toys and action figures. You know, they think dollars and cents, and so they brought him back. And I think if you're asking me, is there value in bringing Hulk Hogan back? Absolutely. Dollars and cents. Of course, he's the biggest star of all time. Are you kidding me? Now, I'm not sitting here saying that I need to see him back on television every single week, but you always knew it was inevitable they were going to bring this guy back. But, you know, at the same time, I can understand people just not wanting them to have anything to do with the guy. So I'm just curious where everybody stands on that. If you just can't get enough of WWE, fear not, because they are adding even more programming. This is in response to that survey they put out a few weeks ago. Remember, they were asking all those questions about, would you want to see independent wrestling content on the network? And one of the questions they asked was, would you be interested in seeing a weekly live cruiserweight show on the network? Clearly the answer was yes. WWE has announced that starting Tuesday, November 29, they are debuting a brand new weekly cruiserweight series on the network called 205 Live. 205 being the weight limit for the cruiserweight division. Not a show live from Alabama each week. It will air live at 10 p.m. Eastern, right after SmackDown goes off the air, which means Talking Smack, which is currently the best WWE show of the 290 that they air each week, is being bumped back by an hour, and will now air at 11 p.m. after the Cruiserweight show. This means the Cruiserweights will now be working both Raw and SmackDown taping, so they are still going to be working on the Raw brand, but I guess they can no longer be called exclusive to Monday Night Raw. Of course, they never really were exclusive to Monday Night Raw. That was a lie anyway, because these guys continue every single week practically to wrestle on NXT, so how could they be exclusive to Raw? They will be taping these matches at the arena wherever SmackDown is each week, not at Full Sail like they did for the Cruiserweight Classic. Mauro Ranallo and Corey Graves will be the announcers, which means that Graves will now be announcing Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays, since he still calls the NXT shows with Tom Phillips. I like Corey Graves, so I'm okay with this, although if you're doing a Cruiserweight show and you're filming it at the SmackDown tapings, I think it would have been cool to see them reunite Mauro with Daniel Bryan, but Bryan's on Talking Smack every week, so I can see how that might be a bit of a challenge. We don't know what this means for Talking Smack as far as will the show still air live, but just an hour later, or are they going to tape it first and then air it? If they tape it, that means that they can edit it, and they can edit stuff off the show if they want to, which would be awful. That, to me, may be the biggest crime of this whole thing. What makes the show so much fun is that things happen live. There's no filter. Daniel Bryan says whatever he wants. Clearly, he says whatever he wants if you watch the show. Even things I'm sure they'd rather not have him saying, like when he brought up Trump last week and immediately said, oh, they're telling me in my ear not to mention Trump. It's like, yeah, you don't say. Dean Ambrose and Belt. He said Belt multiple times last Wednesday. I could just picture Vince having a stroke off camera. I really, really hope they keep that thing live. I really do. I'm fine with giving the Cruiserweights their own show, and clearly if that's what the people want, you know, based on this survey, then fine, give them what they want. I'm fine with it provided we see a Cruiserweight Classic version of that division, and not the watered-down version we see on Raw. And I don't mean keep it storyline-free. You know, for all I know, they may just continue the storylines from Monday on Tuesdays. I don't know what their plan is as far as that goes. I don't know if this is going to be a straight, like, sports-like show presentation like they had for the Cruiserweight Classic where they're, you know, and that's not even fair of me to say that there were no storylines for the Cruiserweight Classic. There absolutely were, but they were still handled differently than you would see on Raw. On Raw, the division to me so far has been a dud, and it's still early. It's only been a month and a half or whatever. It's been 2 months, but it's a dud. I mean, it does almost nothing for me. I was so excited for the Cruiserweights to come to Raw. Now it's like they've been, you know, I don't know. It's like I think, was it Alien? Was it the movie Alien where, you know, you see the wall with all the faces or whatever, the people that have been absorbed? It's like the Cruiserweight division has been absorbed by this monster that is Raw. And, you know, it's just not the same. But yet I would watch the Cruiserweight Classic every week, and I would be excited. And when they told the Brian Kendrick story, which now just seems so lame, the way they handled it. But on the Cruiserweight Classic, it resonated. Like, it was an emotional thing. Here's this guy who used to be in WWE, and now he's back, and everyone, you know, they want to see this underdog win. Daniel Bryan put that thing over on commentary every week because he and Kendrick are friends. He was practically in tears when Kendrick lost. He got in the ring to embrace him when he lost in the tournament. They were telling that story that this could be it for him. And back then it was believable because we didn't know. We didn't know if they just brought Brian Kendrick in for the tournament and they were going to let him go after that. Look at Tajiri. They brought in Tajiri. Tajiri hasn't been back. They brought him in for the tournament and that was it. So it could have been the same thing with Kendrick. This guy's fighting for a spot. It's a story that resonated. On Raw, it doesn't make any sense. The guy debuted as part of the Cruiserweight roster. He's got a championship match on pay-per-view, and we're supposed to buy into the story that if I don't win this match, I'm done. My career is over. It's over for me. Please lose to me. It's such shit. And I don't have a problem with them extending storylines to this show. I just want the presentation to be handled better. You know, and I don't even know what that means. When I watch it, I'll kind of be able to tell. It's all in the presentation, I guess, in the announcing, and that's a big part of it too. We'll see. But if it's this watered down stuff that we've seen on Monday nights, then this thing, you know, I don't know what their benchmark is to determine whether it works or not. But it won't work for me, and I'm not going to take an extra hour out of my week to watch another show if it's just an extension of what I'm already sitting through on Monday nights. I'm not going to do that. And part of it also is the style. I know Perkins almost killed himself on that Rana out of the ring, if you saw that match with him and Kendrick last Monday, but they've got to let these guys go out there and pick up the pace a little bit more. That's another big part of it, too. Yeah, I don't want to see them like kill themselves and drop each other on their heads, but this is not the cruiserweight division I was expecting. It's like they're conforming to a certain style that's expected of you on Raw. This thing is supposed to break out of the pack and be different. Not be the same. Just with smaller versions of what we see in the main event. Although some of you may argue that we already see smaller guys being pushed on top and it doesn't work. And we could have a whole debate about that. But that's what I want to see more of. I want to see more of the high-paced, high-energy action that we saw in the tournament, because I thought that tournament was tremendous, and I think it was well-received by everybody. So if you want to put that in you want to condense it in a weekly format, great. I don't know, it may be overkill. I don't know that people are going to want to sit through another hour of WWE television every week. I'm sure Cody in our Facebook group would, but, you know, we'll see. I guess we'll see what the presentation is like. I don't know why they have to do it after SmackDown. That's my whole thing. You know, they could just tape the show before SmackDown, air it the next day after NXT. You get a 2-hour block. That's all. Isn't that more palatable than having another? Because here we are now. We have 3.5 hours now. A 3.5 hour block of TV on Tuesdays, not counting whatever the pre-show is. I assume they must have a SmackDown pre-show. That's at least half an hour. To go with the 3 hours plus that we have on Mondays. And then NXT on Wednesdays. I mean, to call that overkill would be an understatement. But look, it's all about adding new content to the network. You don't have to watch it live. You can watch it on demand whenever you want. But I do think they're burning out their audience. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And if that's what they are willing to do for the sake of adding new content to the network, then I guess that's the trade-off. You know, you burn out your audience and you hope that there's enough of it left to subscribe and to sustain you going forward. That's the trade-off that they made, and, you know, we'll see if it pays off for them. But there's no doubt that they're burning people up, because I hear from a lot of them every single week. They email me to tell me I can't take it anymore. No mas. I'll listen to your show, but I can't watch this anymore. Now, the best part of the announcement that they put out was seeing Jack Gallagher's name as part of the roster that they mentioned. So that confirms that he is on his way in. I know some of you wrote into me there's like a visa issue or something. So that was a relief that I know that he is at some point on the way in. They also mentioned Akira Tozawa, who I just saw finished up all of his commitments over in Japan with Noah. He spent 11 years there. Apparently he will now just go by Tozawa, because this company is biased against people whose first name begins with the letter A. Although they do have a few of them on SmackDown. Maybe it's just a Raw thing. But, you know, Antonio Cesaro became Cesaro. Adrian Neville became Neville. Alexander Rusev became Rusev. And now Akira Tozawa becomes Tozawa. The good thing is that if they ever sign Adam Cole and they put him on Raw, they already have a Cole on that show, so he'd have to keep his first name. He would have to, unless they make him the son of Michael Cole, and I don't want to give them any ideas. The PPG Paints Arena in Pittsburgh leaked the main event for WWE's Roadblock pay-per-view on December 18th, which seems to confirm the rumors that were going around online this week that Roman Reigns would be feuding with Kevin Owens after the Survivor Series on the arena's Facebook page. And by the way, these arena names are out of control. Like Cody Thomas, one of our PayPal donators you heard there at the beginning. Out of control. I did a quick search before on the one in New Orleans, because I was there for Mania or Raw the night after, whatever, a few years ago. And I remember thinking, what a stupid name this arena has. It's the Smoothie King Center, in New Orleans. Okay, so I looked that up. But then while I'm searching before, I'm like, let me search around and see some of the other names. That's not even the worst one. They have the Talking Stick Resort Arena in Phoenix. Yes, the Talking Stick Resort Arena. That is a real name. And then how about this one? How'd you like to play in the KFC Yum Center? These people should be drug tested before being allowed to buy the naming rights of these buildings. PPG Paints Arena isn't much better, but at least it's not named after a talking stick. On their Facebook page, they said, just announced Roman Reigns versus Kevin Owens for the WWE Universal Championship live at Roadblock, end of the line, on December 18th. First of all, I didn't even know they were bringing Roadblock back. We already had a Roadblock this year, now I guess it's a pay-per-view. Okay, fine, whatever. Thing is, the natural progression of the Kevin Owens Chris Jericho story is that they split up and Jericho challenges him for the championship at some point. And as much as I don't want to see them break up yet, and Jericho is much better in the role of whiny heel, it would make more sense to do the breakup and have Jericho challenge him for the title on that show and make, you know, Kevin Owens look really strong in a losing effort, because there really is no need for Jericho to win the championship. I'm sure people would probably like it, but it's not like he's going to get a long run with it or something like that. There's no need for it. So you could do the split, do the match. I'm sure they'd have a great match. Owens sneaks out a win in the end. That would be the way to do it. You could do the match, and then after, turn Jericho back if you want to. I mean, he doesn't even have to be a babyface. It doesn't have to be like a babyface turn. He doesn't really even have to turn in the first place. The fans will do that on their own. They're already turning the guy. He could still come out with his list and do all the stuff he's doing. But then after the match, maybe after the pay-per-view is over the next night, he can go back to being the Jericho that he was before he split with Owens, right? I mean, hell, he could even make up with Kevin Owens and they can hug and be friends again and everybody will boo or cheer, whatever. But to me, that's the natural progression for this thing. And Roman Reigns should be kept far away from that Universal title at least a little bit longer. Like, in my head, I'm thinking longer term here when Finn Balor comes back. Finn Balor has a clean pinfall win on Raw over Roman Reigns. And if you remember, Roman Reigns was interviewed after the match outside the ring, and he was looking up at Finn Balor and saying, you know, this kid's the real deal, and, you know, I look forward to facing him again. I mean, that was when Roman was still kind of in the doghouse. But I look at that and I say, man, if they really wanted to here, they have got a story made with Finn Balor coming back, and either Balor wins the championship and Roman goes heel and obliterates him, or Balor comes back and by that point maybe Roman has the title and, you know, he has a match with Balor and they play off the fact that Balor beat him once before, and so Roman Reigns starts to act a little heelish and he's doing whatever it takes to keep his championship. All of this would be predicated on Roman Reigns going heel, which, if they're as resistant to him going heel as they have been for, you know, however many years for John Cena, then I won't hold my breath. But I see a story there. So it's not like I don't ever want to see Roman Reigns challenging for the Universal title. He's the U.S. champ. He's been, you know, a step or two below, I guess, in the pecking order. But really, how much lower is he? We've seen him in plenty of TV main events. He was in the TV main event this past week. It's not like he's really been all that deep pushed. But I think to have him out of the championship picture is for the better for now. So I don't want to see him challenging for the championship next month. It's too soon. So the Jericho thing makes sense. If they don't want to do it, well, look, you could do Rollins and Owens again. It's not something I'm really all that interested in, even though they had a kick-ass match last weekend, because I look at what's going on SmackDown right now with AJ Styles and Dean Ambrose. And AJ Styles and Dean Ambrose have had some pretty good matches over the last few weeks. Even some of the best matches of all year that I've seen Ambrose in. Which I'm sure is a big credit to who he's in the ring with. So, I know those guys can go. But how many times do we need to see AJ Styles against Dean Ambrose? Right? We're just about at that point of ridiculousness with how many matches these two have had. In just the last 2 months. And now they're going to headline another pay-per-view, we found out, in December. the Raw brand doesn't have a lot of options on the babyface side after Roman Reigns, right? Finn Balor's injury really screwed things up for them. But they've also got Sami Zayn. If they don't want to pull the trigger on the Jericho thing just yet, you've got Sami Zayn. I'd rather see Jericho or Zayn in that spot before Roman Reigns. And just as a stopgap, it's not like Sami Zayn is going to take Roman Reigns' place as the guy. That ain't going to happen. That ain't going to happen. Roman is still the heir apparent. Roman is still their guy. Nothing has changed. I'm not even saying that they should change. If that's their guy and that's their plan, then that's fine. I'm just talking about December. Getting through December. Getting to the Alamo Dome. What are you going to do with this guy? And Roman and Owens doesn't really do much for me. So you've got Zayn, right? At least with Zayn, for all the matches that he and Owens have had, I just got done talking about Styles and Ambrose. Yes, Zayn and Owens have had a bunch of matches also, but at least they've kept them apart for a few months, right? At least it's been 3, 4, 5 months, whatever it's been. But then you look beyond Sami Zayn and you really see the depth issue on that Raw brand as far as babyfaces go. And tag teams too. We could talk about tag teams. I mean, even on Talking Smack, they were mocking the Raw brand. They were looking at the current participants in that tag team match, the SmackDown match between the two brands. You know, on SmackDown, they've already got American Alpha in there and the Hype Bros and the Usos and Slater and Rhino. And then you look at Raw and you've got The New Day. And I guess now you've got Cesaro and Sheamus. And after that, the well runs pretty dry because Gallows and Anderson, I mean, Jesus, you know, I've said my piece about them. You know, you've got Goldust and R-Truth. Ooh, you know, ooh, how exciting. I mean, the Raw brand has a lot of depth issues. We can look up and down that roster and see those problems. But when you get beyond Zayn and you get beyond Rollins and then you've got Reigns, okay, well, there's no other strong option, so I guess that's why they're going to Roman Reigns. But I just said, Jericho and Zayn, you've got two options right there. You don't have to go to Roman Reigns yet. Monday Night Raw this past week was live from Hartford, Connecticut. Raw Twitter poll. Almost 1,800 of you voted. 39% thumbs up, 61% thumbs down. You did not like this show. Again, it's hard for me to blame you. I mean, even with the good stuff they have on there, it's just, you know, I don't know. you can hear the defeat. You can hear the defeat in my voice. You know, it's just, what are you going to do? I can sit here and I can rant and rave every single week about how long it is and how they're not making these guys special and those guys special. But you know what? I can only say the same thing over and over again. You know, it just doesn't get through. So what's the point? They opened the show with the best segment, in my opinion. This is going to piss off the people who hate Goldberg, but it's true. They opened with Goldberg. They peaked early. Paul Heyman came out to interrupt him. He teased that Brock Lesnar was about to come out. They even played his music, but nobody came out. Heyman just smirked. This was Shawn Michaels in Montreal-level trolling right here from Paul Heyman. Rusev came out to confront Goldberg. Poor Rusev. You know, he gets beaten by Roman Reigns the night before. Now he comes out and gets beaten up by Goldberg. Rusev tells him, I used to watch you in WCW, spear and jackhammer people, and those moves require great power, and I'm not sure you have it in you anymore. So he punched Goldberg in the face, which he no-sold. Goldberg threw some knees. He slipped and fell on his ass, but he recovered quickly. He gave Rusev an impressive jackhammer. I mean, look, Rusev is a big boy, okay? And I didn't know if Goldberg had it in him to take a guy like Rusev and hold him up there. I don't know if he could do it to Brock either. But this inspired some confidence watching him lift up a guy like Rusev like he was nothing for the jackhammer and slam him down. And then as Heyman stood over Rusev's dead body, Goldberg speared Paul Heyman out of nowhere, sent him to the hospital. I think they even called it the hospital. I was amazed. I thought this was great. You know, to me, they had to have Goldberg do something physical to show that he can still go. All this talk about how I only got one more match in me and, you know, he's older now. People remember Goldberg for the explosive moves and the power moves. And I think people needed to just get that confirmation and needed to see that, hey, this guy can still go. You know, this guy can still kick ass. Now, I don't know that I would necessarily have him do that to Brock before the pay-per-view. I guess if they want to do a pull apart on that go home show, because I think Lesnar and Goldberg are going to be on that final Raw before Survivor Series, you could do some kind of a pull apart. I wouldn't do too much, like have them touch each other too much. But yeah, you know, look what they did with Brock and The Undertaker. That was one of the best pull apart brawls I've ever seen last year. They can pull off something like that. I think they'd get a lot of people interested in that match. Cliff in our Facebook group pitched an idea where Shane McMahon could interfere potentially in that Lesnar-Goldberg match at Survivor Series and cost Brock the match as a way to set up a match of his own with Shane at WrestleMania. Now, when this rumor first popped up a couple of months ago about, you know, Shane McMahon is the rumored opponent for Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, I just said no. No, thank you. I'm not interested in wasting a Brock Lesnar WrestleMania match on Shane McMahon. They did it this year with The Undertaker. It was a story that didn't really make a whole lot of sense the way they pitched it. It really didn't. And remember the whole lockbox thing? Boy, that went somewhere, didn't it? So I don't want to see Brock Lesnar, who wrestles rarely enough as it is, get, you know, wasted and stuck in a match with Shane McMahon at WrestleMania. WrestleMania is the key there. Because if they want to do the match, let's say, at the Royal Rumble, they want to have a kind of a marquee Brock match at the Alamo Dome. Again, not that Shane McMahon is this great opponent for Brock Lesnar. It's comical, but you know what? I don't mind them doing it if they want to do it at the Rumble. That's fine. I just don't want to see it at WrestleMania. So that's the only kind of chink in the armor with your plan there. I'd rather, if they're going to do that, let them promote a match between them for the Rumble and not do it for WrestleMania. Surely they could come up with a better name to put in there with Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania than Shane McMahon. But you are then having Bill Goldberg be the first guy to pin Brock Lesnar in a singles match if we go with your idea and he wins at Survivor Series. That would be Brock's first loss, his first singles pinfall loss since probably since Triple H, I would guess, right? I think so. The question is, how important is it to you that he stays unbeaten? That's the question that WWE needs to ask themselves. Where is this going with Brock? Brock is just mowing down everybody now, year after year. Unbeaten since ending the streak at WrestleMania. Unbeaten in singles matches since ending the streak at WrestleMania. I think he's been in a triple threat here and there. But where are they going? That's the question. Do they have a plan? Do they have a name? Is it Roman Reigns? Is Roman Reigns going to be the man to slay the beast? Do they even know where they're going? That's what they need to ask themselves. How important is it that we keep Brock unbeaten? Or can we do some sort of a finish where Brock doesn't lose anything because he got screwed over by Shane? Goldberg gets the win. You know, Goldberg winning only makes sense if he's wrestling another match after this. If they convinced him to come back and wrestle, if he doesn't get hurt, and he thinks, well, okay, that wasn't so bad, I can do another match, then they could do something with Goldberg at WrestleMania, maybe put him in the Hall of Fame, and he can ride off into the sunset. But if this is a one-and-done situation for Bill Goldberg, you know what I mean? Like, how are you going to have him beat Brock Lesnar? That makes absolutely no sense. Brock has to win. But they did that ending at SummerSlam, and then they had Shane on SmackDown a week or two later saying, this thing with Brock isn't over. Like, that actually did happen. They're going to go back to that at some point. So this would be one way for them to do that. Tamu, in our Facebook group, got to give him a shout out as well, he pointed this out. On WWE's YouTube channel, they have a video titled, How Rusev Reacted to Goldberg's Massive Jackhammer. And I was afraid to click the link with a title like that, but I did. And when I did, I saw Kathy Kelly talking, and behind her was a man in a banana costume eating a banana. A banana cannibal, if you will. So that was the weirdest thing I saw all week. Even more than the trick or street fight that came next on this show between Enzo Amore and Luke Gallows. I know it was goofy. I know a lot of you hated it. When I tweeted something about how I enjoyed seeing this and they should do stuff like this more often, a lot of you thought I was being sarcastic. I really wasn't. I enjoyed it. for what it was. Maybe, and I admit it might just be because I'm a big mark for Halloween. Like anything Halloween related, I'm a big fan of. Because I know, like, when they do this kind of stuff on Christmas, I just roll my eyes. I have no use for it. I think it's dumb. I think it's just idiotic. And this was kind of the same thing, only with a Halloween theme. So yes, it might just have to do with that fact. But I did like it. Maybe it was the, I don't know, maybe it was the image of Enzo throwing tiny pumpkins at Gallows that cracked me up. But I like the thing also at the haunted house that they did with R-Truth and Goldust. And it's not like I've been enjoying all this R-Truth Goldust stuff they've been doing. Not that they've been doing much with them, but I enjoyed that too. So it probably is the Halloween theme. By the way, how unbearable will Mick Foley be on this show when Christmas rolls around? I was just thinking about that, like, oh my God. Just, oh my goodness. Maybe they can give him the week off for Christmas this year. Speaking of Foley, he announced the Raw team for Survivor Series. It will consist of Kevin Owens, Chris Jericho, Roman Reigns, and Braun Strowman. After Strowman won a Battle Royal to fill the fourth spot on the team. And there's one more spot left to be filled. It has to be Seth Rollins. I mean, just what else would Rollins do on this show? It can be nobody else but Seth Rollins. To me, there's no great suspense there. I mean, they could swerve us, but again, I don't know, what do you do with Rollins then? Now, if that team sounds familiar, it's because it's the exact team that I pitched weeks ago here on the Sound Off. So I was very happy to see that come to fruition. Main event on the show had Roman Reigns beating Chris Jericho by DQ when Kevin Owens interfered. Seth Rollins eventually made the save. They stared at each other in the ring, and the fans were hot for it. And that's how they went off the air. Now, this leads into SmackDown. SmackDown Live. The Undertaker is coming back. I think we could kind of surmise that from his appearance at the Cavaliers game a few weeks ago with the, you know, his hair is kind of long, and he dyed it black. He was in the full getup. He looked pretty good. You know, I guess appearances, you can't necessarily judge based on appearances whether or not he can physically go in the ring, but I'm sure he can, and I'm sure we have not seen the last Undertaker match. So, he is coming back. He's coming back sooner, though, than I think a lot of people thought. He will be live on the Go Home show to Survivor Series. It also happens to be the 900th episode of SmackDown. It could just be a cameo, it's a special show, he'll, you know, chokeslam somebody. That is possible, but I'm thinking it's more than that. And, you know, you've got this Kane storyline. Undertaker's brother's been feuding with the Wyatts, and Kane is outnumbered. It would make sense to have Undertaker come back and even the odds, maybe even do a tag team match, Undertaker and Kane against Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt. You know, and then maybe have that be the match where Orton turns on Bray, since I don't see this Randy Wyatt stuff going on much longer. I think it would have been cool if instead of Baron Corbin, I was thinking about this, instead of Baron Corbin, they had the Undertaker be announced as like the surprise final member of Team SmackDown at Survivor Series. So you know, you'd have a team of AJ Styles, Dean Ambrose, Randy Orton, Bray Wyatt, and The Undertaker. And then you could even plant the seed. Like, things happen in that match that night. You plant the seed for a WrestleMania match. Or a Royal Rumble match for The Undertaker at the Alamo Dome. They're going to be in Texas, right? They're going to be in his backyard. Maybe a championship match with AJ Styles. You know, I never actually expected the match with Shawn Michaels to happen. It was an idea that I pitched. Again, I said this a few weeks ago. It got blown up into so much more. It was just an idea that I pitched. But I think Undertaker and AJ is a lot closer to happening than Shawn Michaels and AJ. And you could absolutely do that match. You know, you absolutely could do that match. You can find some kind of justification for why The Undertaker comes in and gets a championship match. You know why? Because he's the frickin' Undertaker. You don't need much more than that. You don't have to reinvent the wheel here. You don't have to really... how are we going to get The Undertaker in a championship match? He's The Undertaker. You can find a way. Very easily. That's your reason right there. He's The Undertaker. He wants a championship match. Boom. He's got one. Problem solved. So I'm just saying, if he were on the Survivor Series team, I mean, it's a moot point because he's not, but I was kind of thinking that that would have been a better idea. And it would have made the match, it would have added some star power to the match. And Undertaker being in a 5-on-5 tag team match, it's perfect for him. Are you kidding me? Being in a 5-on-5 Survivor Series match where he doesn't have to do too much is probably the best possible situation for The Undertaker to be in. But I pitched the Undertaker Styles Championship match idea for the Rumble because I still think that it's John Cena beating Styles to get number 16 at WrestleMania. That's why you got to do it at the Rumble and not Mania. As it is, Daniel Bryan did announce the members of Team SmackDown. It will be Styles, it will be Ambrose, Orton, Wyatt, and Baron Corbin. I think we see something happen here with Orton and Bray. Maybe Kane or even The Undertaker gets involved. And whatever it is, they all get chased away, right? Eliminated or brawl to the back, whatever happens. I haven't thought about it that deeply yet. But I'm just thinking, okay, get them out of the equation during this match. That leaves Dean Ambrose, AJ Styles, and maybe Baron Corbin if he hasn't been eliminated yet. Maybe they all gang up on Ambrose, right? Maybe they just, you know, they're kind of screwing over their own team, but they something happens, they gang up on Dean Ambrose. Now the heels are beating him down. His own teammates are beating him down. You've got Roman Reigns, and most likely Seth Rollins on the Raw side. Somehow, I think we're going to see a situation here where all three Shield guys end up fighting off the bad guys, and at least for one night only, we get that Shield reunion. We get to see that Shield pose with all the fists coming together at the end of the match, even though they're on opposing brands. I think we're going to see it. I think we're going to see that. Dolph Ziggler announced that since Miz did not want his Intercontinental Championship rematch the week before, he said, well, screw you, I'm moving on. And he issued an open challenge for Survivor Series to anyone on the Raw roster who wants to challenge for the Intercontinental title. I didn't know that he had the authority to do that, but apparently he does. I would like to see it be Sami Zayn. It gives him something to do since, you know, he's been feuding kind of with Braun Strowman. Strowman's already in the Survivor Series elimination match. So where does that leave Sami? It leaves him nowhere. So it gives him something to do. And I figure Miz probably interferes and costs Zayn the match because if the Intercontinental title goes to Raw, Miz is smart enough to know that I ain't getting my rematch. So I better keep that belt here. So he might actually help Dolph in that situation. And then I could see them having a, you know, like a ladder match for the Intercontinental title at TLC next month. After Dolph issued his open challenge, by the way, Mauro Ranallo said, Survivor Series is the only place where you can see the Raw stars battling the SmackDown stars. And I just thought to myself, yeah, aside from SummerSlam. Right? Yeah, Brock was a Raw guy. Orton was a SmackDown guy. Yeah, aside from SummerSlam, that would be accurate. American Alpha beat the Spirit Squad. The Usos beat the Headbangers to qualify for the Raw vs. SmackDown tag team match at Survivor Series. The show-long storyline was James Ellsworth, who now has entrance music. He has entrance music and a t-shirt. So if he's not signed, I think it's pretty safe to say that he's going to be under contract very shortly. He wanted desperately to be in Dean Ambrose's corner again for his match. Yet another match against AJ Styles. He wanted to be in his corner so that he could make things right after what happened the week before where he accidentally got Dean DQ'd. And Ambrose and Daniel Bryan both said no. They absolutely forbid him from coming down to the ring during the match. In one backstage segment later in the show, the female robot microphone holder referred to James Ellsworth as James Ellis, which Ambrose corrected her on. James Ellis. Tough day at the office, I guess. AJ Styles against Dean Ambrose in a non-title match. Ellsworth did run out, as it turned out. He came through the crowd. He was being chased down by security. He is totally turning on Dean Ambrose. Come on now. We can see this coming from a mile away. This reeks of AJ Lee and John Cena all over again. When AJ Lee tipped over the ladder on Cena in that TLC match and helped Dolph Ziggler win, this was a few years ago, right? It's going to go down the exact same way. In fact, Ambrose won this match here. He beat AJ Styles. He's getting a championship match. It's going to be a TLC match next month against AJ. They could literally redo the same spot again, only do it with Ellsworth instead of AJ this time. And then maybe Ellsworth can be AJ's lackey, the way that Ralphus used to be for Chris Jericho. I don't know why they don't just trade Anderson and Gallows over to SmackDown, put him back with AJ. But the next best thing, if they're not going to do it, is give AJ a lackey to stooge off on. Why not? NXT. Not playing the NXT music because there's not much to review. I didn't see the show, so this will be brief. Austin Aries had surgery for his broken orbital bone on Thursday, so he's going to be out until sometime early next year. It's a tough break for him because, you know, he was just partnering up with Roderick Strong, who just debuted, and I don't know how long that team would have gone on for. He had the feud going on with Hideo Itami, who's also hurt. Everyone's getting hurt. This is ridiculous. There's something in the water down there. So, best of luck to him. Hopefully, he'll be back soon enough. So, NXT this week, like I said, I didn't get to see the whole show. But just to recap some of the key things that happened, I know William Regal made a match between Roddy and one of the members of TM61. With the winner of the singles match, their team would advance in the tournament. I guess that was the stip. And TM61 got the win, so they advance in the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. Gargano and Ciampa, I know, got a forfeit win over the Revival. I read what happened here. It was, I guess, Scott Dawson came out talking about a knee injury, and maybe he's legit hurt. I assume he's not. That seems like an awful lame way to get out of this tournament and to get them out of, I guess, losing. Because they could have lost. It's a non-title match. They could have gotten a win over the champs. Wouldn't have hurt the Revival. But again, maybe he is hurt. So they forfeited. Gargano and Ciampa move on. And the Authors of Pain got a win on this show over No Way Jose and Rich Swann. And in the main event, and this just blew my mind. I mean, I guess they're trying to put the new guys over. But Sanity beat Kota Ibushi and TJ Perkins. And Kota Ibushi took the losing fall in that match. That just seems wrong. Ugh, I'm almost glad I missed it. So that was NXT this week, and as I look here at the, here we go. I'm looking at the brackets, and where this thing appears to be going, and it looks like, I guess the semifinals are going to be TM61 against Sanity, and then we have the Authors of Pain against Gargano and Ciampa. So the way I see this going, I'm sure Gargano and Ciampa are going to the finals. I think they'll find some way to beat the Authors of Pain, or the Authors of Pain will get DQ'd, or something along those lines. So Gargano and Ciampa go to the finals. I figure Sanity, they're pushing these guys all the way. They're going to the finals. So we'll have a final of Sanity against Team DIY. And I think this is probably the point where they pull the trigger on a turn with Ciampa turning on Gargano, because I think they're going to lose. And I think when they do lose and Sanity wins, that's going to push Ciampa over the edge, because in a very subtle way, they've been building this now for a number of months, even going back to TakeOver in Brooklyn, but even before that, where they've lost some key matches. And typically when they do, it's Gargano who takes that losing fall. You know, like his knee was hurt in the match in Brooklyn, and he had to tap out. And multiple times they've kind of shown Ciampa's face, and he really does. You know, they call him Psycho Killer. You know, he fits the role, he fits the mold, because he looks like he's about to snap at any moment. And I thought it was going to happen in Brooklyn, and it didn't, you know, when he was helping his partner up and they started to walk down the aisle. So here we are again now. This is a big moment for them. They're in the finals. This, you know, if they could win the Dusty Classic. And I think if they fall short, I think when the match is over, we're going to see the big turn, which is where I assume this is going. So we'll see. I guess we'll see if I'm right or not, because my understanding is they're only doing the finals in Toronto at TakeOver. I think they're doing the two semis on TV in the next few weeks, which is kind of a shame. I'm more of a fan of doing most of the tournament matches on the actual pay-per-view, but I guess whatever, it is what it is. Don't forget, Pro Wrestling Magic's Final Hours, the Road to Kingdom show, takes place Saturday, November 19th at New Milford High School in New Milford, Connecticut. Or New Milford, New Jersey. My goodness, not Connecticut. Don't go to Connecticut, people. There is no New Milford, Connecticut. Don't go there. There actually is a Milford, Connecticut. I think that's what got me confused. I was in Milford, Connecticut a few weeks ago. No, don't go there. It's in New Milford, New Jersey at the high school there. 4 p.m. start time. A portion of the proceeds will go to the Children's Cancer Institute for Pediatric Cancer Research. You can buy tickets at prowrestlingmagic.ticketleap.com. Use the promo code SOLOMONSTER at checkout and get $3 off your ticket. prowrestlingmagic.ticketleap.com. Also, I had a chance to watch the 9 Legends expansion pack the other day. For those who don't know, 9 Legends is mostly a documentary with interviews with some big-time wrestling personalities. sort of wrapped in this storyline. It's a unique thing. It's wrapped in the storyline of a kid who's forced to spend a night at his grandfather's house listening to stories that his grandfather is telling him about all of the great interviews he once did with all of these wrestlers back in the day. I guess it's set in the future, I think in the year 2050. And the rest of the film, it's basically just playing these various interviews with some pretty big names. So again, the whole premise of the story that it's wrapped around here, I guess you got to think of The Princess Bride in a way, with Peter Falk telling Fred Savage a bedtime story. The film has interviews with Goldberg. It's very timely with Goldberg being back. Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Mike Tyson, who is a big-time wrestling fan, obviously had some involvement with wrestling himself over the years. Rob Van Dam, Dynamite Kid. Clearly, this was filmed a while back before Dynamite Kid. I don't know what he has or what's going on with him. I know he had a bunch of strokes, and I saw there was a GoFundMe for him, and not something I would contribute to. I've got my own thoughts on the Dynamite Kid, but this was back, I guess, during a time when he was of sound body and mind, so they have an interview with him, which is pretty rare to get an interview with the Dynamite Kid. So that's in there as well. Ted DiBiase, Lita, and Randy Couture of UFC fame, who often gets name-dropped on TV by JBL, so he must be JBL's favorite fighter. That's a lot of big names that they've got in this film, and it's all these interviews that are kind of culled together and just strung up in film form, and they talk about different stories from their careers over the years. There's a Nine Legends expansion pack, and it's out now, and the expansion pack has audio interviews laid over the film itself. They have interviews with Diamond Dallas Page, for example. He's on there talking about Goldberg, who's one of the subjects of the film. Robin Leach. Remember Robin Leach from Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous back in the day? He's on there talking about Ted DiBiase. You know, because he was a guest at WrestleMania 4, one of the many celebrity guests at WrestleMania 4. And I will say, I enjoy the Robin Leach. Of all the stuff in the expansion pack, which is pretty good, I enjoy the Robin Leach interview the most, because I've not heard him talk about wrestling since he made that cameo. Remember? And what was his cameo? If you remember, he was there to present the Winged Eagle. The Winged Eagle was just brand new at the time, came out in 88, and he was there to present the new championship to the winner of the tournament. And I have not heard him talk about pro wrestling since then in any interviews. I'm not saying he hasn't, but it was cool to hear him tell stories about that night and tell stories about what Vince McMahon was like and Ted DiBiase was like behind the scenes. Paul Jay, who directed Wrestling with Shadows, is on there talking about Bret Hart, obviously. And just a bunch of other people as well. So you can buy a one-day pass to watch the film and the expansion pack. They're kind of bundled together. $7.99 is the price. Just go to 9legendsfilm.com. And that's the word 9 spelled out, not the number. 9legendsfilm.com is the place to go for that. TNA, or TDC, as I've been calling it. This goddamn company. How's that for a name change? It's like the election every week. It's something new and it's never good. Another half a dozen things happened this week in Dixieland. First, Dixie and TNA got a win in court over Billy Corgan, but they didn't have long to enjoy it. I'll explain why in a little bit. Chancellor Ellen Hobbs Lyle of the Nashville Chancery Court ruled against Billy Corgan's request for a temporary injunction against TNA, which would have rendered them unable to make any kind of business decisions without first running them by him and getting his approval. And she also wiped away the temporary restraining order that Corgan had been granted, which means that Dixie and company are now free and clear to make whatever business moves they see fit. The judge said Billy was unable to prove that TNA had become insolvent and that he... see, and this goes back to what I said last week. She said the pledge agreement that he made with TNA was not enforceable under Tennessee law. That would seem to corroborate what Justin's lawyer friend said. Justin's one of our listeners whose friends is a trial lawyer in the state of Tennessee. I read what she said word for word on the show last week and mentioning that Billy may not end up with a decision in his favor. And indeed, the decision was not in his favor, and that was one of the reasons why. Now, this does not mean that Corgan's lawsuit is thrown out. That is going to continue, it seems like, by all accounts. He's moving forward with that. All this means is that the company is free to move on. They could pay talent, which talent apparently was finally paid. They could sell if they wanted to the highest bidder, which is not going to happen. That's a very tricky-dicky situation there. I'm going to talk about that too. And Corgan was still supposed to be paid by TNA or Anthem or whoever by November 1st. That was the promise that they made in court. I'll get to that in a second too. Now, there were said to be a lot of disappointed wrestlers in TNA on the roster who were hoping Billy would take over and Dixie would be gone. Mike Bennett went on Twitter after the decision came down and said, "Welp, back to bad business as usual." I'm not sure how smart that was, but he wouldn't be the first wrestler to get himself in hot water by saying something stupid on social media. And he damn sure won't be the last. In fact, that's probably enough to qualify him for sad tweet this week. So there you go. 3 days later, this is where things get very interesting. I feel like this is like a dramatic play that I'm reciting here. 3 days later, on Thursday, Anthem Sports announced that they were entering into a, quote, credit relationship with TNA. So basically, they will be funding operations for the company going forward, and they're taking over all the decision-making, which means that Dixie Carter no longer has any power. And according to the release, Billy Corgan is no longer with the company. They had like one line in there. No explanation, just one line. Billy Corgan is no longer with the company. And even though Dixie has no power, this woman has no power. She put them in the situation in the first place. And all they've been doing is, you know, borrowing Peter to pay Paul. All the shit that's been going on. They are keeping her on board as chairman of the company. Yes, Dixie survives yet again, as I feared she would. At least the talent finally got paid. That's the best thing I could say about all this. They finally got their checks cut. You know who didn't get paid? Billy Corgan. And he's pissed. He went on a tweet storm. Actually, he went on a couple of tweet storms this week. The first one after Anthem put that press release out. This is what Corgan said. He said, fact. He's jacking Tyson Kidd's gimmick now. He said, fact. TNA was supposed to pay me 2 days ago, which they swore to in front of a judge. Yesterday, they asked for a day to get the money together, upon which they would reach out directly to settle all claims. So they lied again and have used the time as a weapon. I still have not been paid, and I'm exploring all remedies, including new filings with the court and converting to 36% equity. Which is part of the agreement that he had made, by the way. I guess if he isn't paid, that he can convert. Now, 36% is not a majority stake, but he would be allowed to convert it to 36%, so that's what he's referring to there. So, to summarize here, Billy Corgan funds multiple television tapings. He saves their asses on three different occasions. I think 3 months in a row, June, July, and August. He saved their asses. In return, he is named the president of the company. Never draws a paycheck in his time as president, we found out. And also never really had any power because they only made him president in title only. Instead, they turn around and they fire him and they don't pay him his money back. Nice doing business with you, Billy. Nice doing business with you. But it gets better. Corgan on Twitter claimed that Anthem doesn't owe him $1.8 million. Everyone's throwing around this $1.8 million figure that he's owed. He says, no. They don't owe me $1.8 million. They actually owe me $2.7 million. And here's where they're being really slimy about this whole thing, you know, TNA and Anthem, okay? Corgan's deal, apparently, when he gave TNA the $1.8 million, was that if the company was sold, he would get a 50% what they call transfer fee in the sale. Hence, the $2.7 million figure that he's now throwing out there. Anthem, because they have no interest in paying Corgan any sort of additional fee, they're not paying him $2.7 million, basically says, we're not giving you $2.7 million because we didn't buy TNA. TNA wasn't sold to us. We're simply funding the company. Isn't that interesting? That's where the whole credit relationship, because that was the weirdest press release I've ever seen in my life. I mean, think about it. That was in the title of the... I mean, I do press releases for a living. I'm looking at this thing and I'm going, that's weird. Because I was waiting for the press release that said Anthem Sports purchases Impact Ventures or buys TNA Wrestling or what. No, no. We're entering into a credit relationship with TNA Wrestling. And I thought, that's an odd announcement to make. And now it all makes sense. They don't want to pay Corgan the money. And so, instead, they conceived of this whole credit relationship thing. And you know, to me, it sounds like they did it to get around having to pay Corgan the extra money. They went out of their way not to buy the company and to just fund it so that technically it's not a sale. Bunch of sneaky bastards over there at that company, I must say. And I'm not even saying it's not smart. Hey, good on them for finding a way around it, but it's slimy as all hell. The other problem is that Anthem says it's going to pay Billy the $1.8 million, but only under the condition that he agrees to just walk away. Drop the lawsuit, walk away, and just get the hell out of here, right? That's what they want. He has no interest in doing that. He went back on Twitter on Friday and he said, "Today I am formally requesting repayment of my so-called loan that TNA, which I'm told stalled because they didn't know where to find me." Jesus Christ. Laughs aside, I put up $1.8 million for the express purpose of becoming equity stakeholder and helping a talented roster. Any other assertion is false. So, if I am not repaid today in full and without any conditions attached, I will be forced to once more pursue remedy by taking TNA stock via court. Remember, it was Anthem and not I who stood in front of open court and told the judge they were prepared to pay and in turn find or fund good old solvent TNA, a company which they claim they have no business deal for behind the scenes, yet have released two press releases saying they are taking over. Last thing, despite being called a lender by every arm of TNA propaganda, I can still convert to 36% stock or sell my option to the highest bidder, and that option to convert my loan to 36% stock or auction it off to a pro wrestling titan doesn't require a court order. So it would seem that Corgan is teasing that he might just go ahead and sell his 36% to WWE. Although if I'm WWE, I'm staying far away from this mess. Why would they even want a minority stake in this company? Makes no sense. So that's just him posturing and just saying stuff. Now, the thing with Billy Corgan is this. And I know it sounds like, oh, you're so impartial. There's two sides to every story, Solomon. And that's true. That is true. There is two sides to every story. But this is TNA that we're dealing with here. This is not just a Billy Corgan lawsuit. They've been sued. How many times have they been sued? I've lost track of how many lawsuits have been filed against this company. Do you really think this is a company dealing in good faith? Do you really think that all these other companies and all these other entities and all these other people are coming out of the woodwork and are going through the system and going through the hassle to file lawsuits against TNA because it's fun? So this is not just a Billy Corgan thing. This is a pattern of behavior by this company. And if I were doing business with this company, and there's another lawsuit, by the way, I'm going to get to in a second. There's even more. If I'm a company that's doing business with TNA, and all of a sudden they just stop paying me one day, and then they don't return my calls, and they don't return my emails, that's not how you conduct business. So I have no sympathy for TNA. I have no sympathy for the idiots that run TNA. I would love to see them lose. I said from the beginning, I want to see Billy take over and let him at least try to implement his ideas. I was never one who said, kill it with fire. I hope it dies. I said, I hope Billy can win, and I hope he takes over. I think he's an idiot for getting in bed with these people. I think it was a colossal waste of money. But if that's what he wants to do, then great. Maybe he's got the vision to lead this company from a freaking 0.3 to an 0.7. Give him the chance. But the thing with Billy Corgan is, he was clearly wronged here. And I would love nothing more, like I said, I want to see him get his comeuppance on these people. He is the babyface, they are the heels in this situation. Absolutely. Because I don't believe they were dealing with him in good faith. I think they continue to deal with him in bad faith. So hopefully karma is a bitch and it comes back to bite them. But that also doesn't mean that Billy Corgan didn't have this coming. Because he chose to do business with these people. Why in God's name would he take almost $2 million of his own money and give it to these people. Why would he do that? I can understand him wanting to help the roster and wanting to be the white knight here. But how could he not do his own... We've heard the term due diligence thrown around these last few weeks. How does Billy Corgan not do his own due diligence before getting in bed with this woman? He said it in, his lawyer said it in court when it came to the debts. If Corgan would have known, he was misled on how much debt they were in. Had he known, he never would have done business with them. How do you not know? How do you not ask questions? How do you not ask for documentation? Whatever documentation WWE asked for, apparently their CFO provided it to them, and WWE lowered their initial offer to buy TNA. We found that out too in all the paperwork. What that tells me is that WWE did what you're supposed to do, which is, okay, you told us this, we gave you a price, but now we want to see the documents. We need the paperwork. And then upon getting the paperwork, they said, wait a minute, this is not what you told us. We're going to revise and lower our offer. Why didn't Billy Corgan do that? Why did it have to get to this point? How did he not know what he was getting himself into by doing business with this woman? He basically, he took her back to his place to have a good time, and he ended up tied to the bedposts while she stole his wallet and robbed him and ran out the front door. That's what happened here. So I have sympathy for Corgan, but only to a point. Because, you know, part of this is absolutely his own fault. Now, you would think, in light of the judge's decision, that this would be considered a great week for TNA, right? Not so fast. The reason TNA didn't get to enjoy their win on Monday is because the very next day, supposedly in an unrelated decision, but I don't know, you know, a little too coincidental for me, but the very next day, Challenge TV in the UK, which had been carrying TNA programming since 2011 apparently, announced that as of January, they would no longer be carrying TNA. Which is not just Impact, it's Impact, it's Explosion, their British boot camp show, everything. They are officially cutting ties with TNA. Which is incredible when you think about it, given how popular TNA was. I don't know if it still is. I mean, you guys in the UK can tell me. I know at one point TNA was hot in the UK, and they would go over there for those UK tapings. They would pack those buildings in 5,000-6,000 people. They look like the big time. Now, I don't know if TNA has cooled off. I get the sense they have. They're going to cool off now. They're not on TV there. But at one time, they were hot. And in the UK and Europe, TNA was actually kind of a popular brand. They'd go over there every year. They'd have those annual UK tours, which I don't think they did this year. And they're not doing it next year either. But you would think it was one of the hottest promotions in the world. And it was also one of their biggest money deals. The money they got from that UK deal, and now, which they needed, all of a sudden, poof, it's gone. Now, Challenge didn't give a reason why. Impact was still one of the highest rated shows, apparently, on the channel on some weeks. But the ratings, I guess, had been, they'd taken a big downturn on average from where they had been the last few years. Most of the shows this year apparently didn't even crack the network's top 10. Although, funny enough, according to a chart, it was posted, I want to give him credit, on Twitter by @GarrettKidney. You can follow him there. I want to make sure I got his name right here. I'm looking at the chart, and it looks like they were number one on the station just last week. I think Impact was number one on Challenge the week before. But again, no reason was given by Challenge as to why they did this. It may have had to do with something else. Look, maybe they uncovered an email from Dixie calling the head of the network a limey bastard. Wouldn't be the first time they lost a TV deal over something like that. I put nothing past these idiots who run this company. Although that might have been tough since, according to PW Insider, their server crashed earlier this week and their email system went down. Maybe they forgot to pay their server people too. So them losing the UK TV deal is devastating. That is terrible news for TNA. But their response to this was laughable. Absolutely laughable. This was their response to the news that Challenge was dropping them from television in the UK, which they posted here on their Facebook page. I can't even believe that they posted this. They said, "We are proud to have had such a great relationship with Challenge and appreciate how the channel brought Impact Wrestling to our avid viewers through the years. In today's world, spoilers are inevitable. We've heard from the amazing fans in the UK and know that you do not want to wait 3 to 5 days to watch the program after it airs in the US. Our goal is to broadcast Impact Wrestling in the UK as close to the US premiere as possible. We look forward to announcing that opportunity soon, so stay tuned." Yes, we are leaving Challenge because spoilers! You poor people shouldn't have to wait 3 days to watch Impact. Surely we can do better. They tape television a month, sometimes 6 weeks in advance here in the States before it ever airs on TV. Just unbelievable. Unbelievable. Just thank Challenge for 5 great years and say you look forward to bringing the UK fans their TNA shows on a new station real soon. That's it. That is all you have to say. That is all that they had to do. No, it's those pesky spoilers. We can't have it leak out that Bram beat Mandrews. They're full of shit. They got fired. This was not their decision. This was not a mutual decision. Whatever their reasons, Challenge no longer wanted to do business with these people. And really, who the hell can blame them? That's why this whole thing of, I forgot where it was that said that there was no relation to Challenge making the announcement on Tuesday to what happened in court. I call bullshit on that too. Because you know full well that they were following everything that was going on and everything that came out. And they probably had a revelation and said, why are we in bed with these people? Why are we doing business with them? The ratings aren't even that great. Let's get out while we can. That's what happened here. I mean, I don't blame them at all. So they're kicking him to the curb, and now TNA is homeless in the UK. This is God opening up yet another can of Raid on the cockroach that will never die. Meanwhile, oh, there's more. I'm not done yet. Meanwhile, David Bixenspan, want to give him a shout out, over on scscoops.com, all the more reason to download the app, broke news of yet another lawsuit filed against TNA. This company, it's like a magnet for litigation. It really is. I mean, someone needs to Photoshop Dixie Carter as Magneto, with all of the different people and the company names being like sucked into her vortex. What does that make this? Number 5? 6? This one was filed back in June by a company called Fraley International. Fraley was the company that handles the design and the importing and the exporting of TNA's merchandise. They're an importer-exporter. You Seinfeld fans will get that joke. So they would design the stuff, they would order the stuff, they would have it shipped directly to TNA from all of their foreign suppliers. Ship it to the TNA warehouse. And they would pay for it all themselves, and then TNA would reimburse them after they got the order. Well, that sounds like a nice idea in theory, except that TNA suddenly stopped paying them in September of last year. 23 straight orders between September and December of 2015, TNA did not pay them one red cent. And the company says TNA never objected to any of the merchandise, they never complained about any of it. They accepted all of it without any sort of issues. $43,000 is what TNA owes them. The company has been giving Fraley the runaround about why or where the money was, I guess until Fraley just said enough is enough and they sued them. So that's yet another lawsuit that TNA now has. And with Anthem now being their sugar daddy, I don't know if they're just going to pay off all these companies. I don't know what's going to happen because you have all this pending litigation against this company. But I guess Anthem is their partner now, and so it's Anthem's responsibility. Dixie doesn't have to worry about it. She's got her 5% or whatever now, and she's the honorary chairman. She doesn't have to worry about this. And oh, by the way, I almost forgot. Their senior director of creative writing quit the company on Friday. Dave Lagana. who was supposedly one of the Billy Corgan allies. He was in the Billy Corgan camp. He was in the wrong camp. He posted a blog announcing his resignation. He thanked everybody under the sun, all the people he's ever worked with, including Vince McMahon and a bunch of people from his time in WWE, including Kevin Dunn, I think, was on there, to Vince Russo and a bunch of people that he worked with in his time in TNA. A laundry list of people that Dave Lagana thanked. Conspicuous by their absence from his roll call of thank yous, John Gaborik, who was not in the Billy Corgan camp, and Dixie Carter. Nowhere to be found. I'm sure it was just an oversight on his part. So I think that's an appropriate note to end on. It'll be interesting if Lagana's departure has any negative effects on TNA television. The one thing TNA's had going for it the last few months, from what people say and from what little I've paid attention to, other than all the Matt Hardy stuff, I enjoyed that. But for the people that watch Impact on a week-to-week basis, it seems like the TV has been the one constant. Overall, it's been pretty good. And I've seen some people credit a lot of that to Lagana. So with him gone, I don't know who that leaves in charge, although if they have a hole to fill in creative, that can only mean one thing. And wouldn't that be the perfect capper to all this? After all of this, this whole TNA mess, this whole TNA saga, if they went and they called you-know-who to come back and write television for them, it would be a fitting end, I think, to this entire thing. I put nothing past them. Lucha Underground. El Rey screwed up a few times on the show. They cut the screen in half with like an ad playing on top and the show was on the bottom. They were running some kind of ad for one of its movie marathons. That was really annoying. Happened twice. Hopefully that never happens again. Don't ever interrupt my Lucha Underground viewing experience. That's my only demand. Feel free to pull that shit during Raw. Don't pull that during this show. Dario Cueto put Cortez Castro in with his brother Matanza to open the show. Lucha Underground title match. Only weeks after Castro had his arm broken by Pentagon. Obviously, it was not fully healed. He was out there, a one-armed man wearing a cast. Castro was selling the thing the whole match like he was in this catastrophic amount of pain. Even I was uncomfortable watching this. And I know it's just a TV show, but I was uncomfortable watching this. And the Matanza re-broke the arm. They put the old, the celery, right? The celery cracking sound effect. Someone standing off camera cracking celery. Isn't that what they do on those old Steven Seagal movies? You could see blood coming from the cast or like on the cast. Castro tried as hard as he could, but in the end, Matanza made short work of him. Hit him with the Wrath of the Gods suplex. Dario got in the ring after the match. He told Castro to get plenty of sleep under the covers, rat. He called him a rat. So now Castro knows that he knows that he's a cop. And that doesn't bode well for his future, I would assume. Probably not for Joey Ryan either, if Castro finds out it was Ryan who ratted him out. In the ring, Prince Puma challenged Mil Muertes to a Grave Consequences match next week. That first Grave Consequences last year is probably still my favorite Lucha Underground match. Going to be hard to top that one, but with Puma in there, you know what? They've got a pretty good shot. Katrina came out. She accepted the match on Mil's behalf. Then Mil came out dressed in a suit for some reason. First time we've seen Mil Muertes on this show dressed up in a suit. Stryker wondered if maybe he had just come from a funeral, which I actually thought was kind of clever. I would have taken it one step further, and I would have said he was attending the funeral for one of his victims, just to make him look like even more of a badass. So he went to go give Puma the flatliner. Puma fought back and knocked him out of the ring. Son of Havoc beat Dr. Wagner Jr. in a match where if Havoc won, Masquerita Sagrada would get a Believer's Backlash match against Famous B. That's the match where all the fans are around the ringside. They can whip the wrestlers with a leather strap. I still remember the first one they ever did. Hernandez. It was Hernandez against, I forgot who. I know Hernandez was in there, but I remember the hot tub review guy from YouTube. He was out there as one of the fans that they picked. I thought that was cool. And actually, anytime I see him in the audience on the show, I see him there from time to time. He always looks like he's having a good time. I got to get my ass to the temple one of these days. I got to get to one of those shows. I still haven't been to Full Sail either. They've been airing these vignettes for this White Rabbit clan now for a few weeks. We finally got a glimpse of Paul London during the latest one, so he's on the way in. I'm not sure with who, but he's on his way in. And the main event was Rey Mysterio and Chavo Guerrero in a Loser Leaves Lucha match. Chavo Classic was out there at ringside. Wasn't in his son's corner. He was just sitting there in the crowd. We had seen Rey Mysterio go to Chavo's father at the end of the show last week to tell him that this has to end, and I guess just kind of, I don't know, get some advice from him. Or I said at the time, like, that's going to end badly for Rey. You don't trust this guy. And sure enough, Chavo Classic did get involved in this match. He hit his own son in the head with a chair. And everybody was confused for about a second or two. And then it became very clear what happened here. Chavo Sr. got Rey Mysterio disqualified, which means that Rey is done with Lucha Underground until Dario came out and he yelled at the referee for even calling a DQ. We don't do no stinking DQs in Lucha Underground. And Dario ordered him to restart the match as an anything-goes match. And he did his whole... I love it when Dario Cueto... He did this twice on this show, and it's become like this thing of great comedy to me. Whenever he comes out of his office, he makes an announcement, and he throws it to the ring announcer and says to ring the bell, and he just yells, like, wildly. He's like, "Ring the bell!" And just the way he does it, he just screams. I can't even do it. I'll wake up the whole neighborhood. But it's a thing of comedy. So he yells, you know, "Ring the bell!" And they ring the bell, and Rey hits a 619 on Chavo Sr., goes for a Rana on Chavo Jr., turns it into a half crab. Rey gets out of it, and Rey ends up hitting a 619 in a drop of the dime to pin Chavo and rid us of him once and for all on this show. All I can say is, thank you, Rey Mysterio. Thank you very much. And that was Lucha Underground, a satisfying conclusion to an otherwise, you know, good show. This was nothing blow away. There were no big twists or turns. And next week, we got Grave Consequences. We got Grave Consequences with Prince Puma and Mil Muertes. That's going to be a hell of a match. If it's anything like the other one we saw, I think there have been two of them. But the first one is the one that I remember the most. If it's anything even remotely like that, I don't know that it'll be as bloody, but that's going to be fun. Time for the mailbag. If you have questions, you could always submit them to me at thesolomonster@gmail.com. All I ask is that you please include your name and where you are from when you write in, especially if you want to possibly get on the show. Gabriel from Brazil. I was watching one of the latest videos on the Up Up Down Down channel, and Roman Reigns was in the video and seemed like a really cool and funny dude, very humble. Why is that not transmitted when he is on TV? Well, because he has to remember all the corny dialogue he had to memorize, that's why. I don't know how many of you saw the leaked script that was floating around from Raw last week. Somebody tweeted me a link to it. It was a few pages, I guess. It got left behind at the arena in Hartford after the show. Looks similar to other WWE scripts that have been leaked over the years. Even going back to the Attitude Era, the basic format doesn't really change. But that whole segment from Raw last week at the beginning with Roman Reigns and Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens, maybe it was 2 weeks. Was it 2 weeks ago? I think it was last week, so maybe it wasn't the beginning of the show. It might have been the middle. But there was a segment with Reigns and Jericho and Owens. It was all there in the script, word for word. And if you go back and you actually listen to what Reigns said, and even Jericho, and I'm sure guys like Jericho and others, they have the freedom to, you know, ad-lib where necessary. I don't know if Roman Reigns has been extended that same courtesy and that same respect, but I saw the script and I went and listened to what he said. And again, word for word, word for word. And it's like, some guys can pull that off, and some guys can't. Roman has his moments where I think he's really good. And then he has a lot of moments where he just gets sabotaged by the stuff that they write for him. And I think, and he bears, you know, a good degree of blame for that too, because even bad dialogue, some people can deliver it in a way that it's not so bad. And Roman just doesn't have that ability, you know, most of the time. And he's not the only one, but he comes off as awkward sometimes, and again, he'll have his moments where he's out there and he'll deliver a badass line, and he'll have this look in his face like he wants to tear you limb from limb. Like, that's cool. But then you got moments like that where you know, you see it right there on the printed page, word for word, verbatim, and you wonder, oh, how come it doesn't translate? He's such a personable, laid back, cool guy. How come it doesn't come across that way on TV? Well, there you go. There's your answer. Mark from Sheffield, England. Would Dixie Carter grabbing Hulk Hogan's leg still be your go-to photo for the cover of the Death of TNA book? Absolutely. I stand by that 100%. Absolutely. Keisha writes in, I was watching the Cruiserweight Classic and thought it was excellent. Like most of your audience, it brought up familiar emotions when I used to watch the Cruiserweights back in the days of WCW. But when I was speaking with a fellow wrestling fan about the Cruiserweights last weekend, we both noticed something. The reason the division is not doing as well is because of the commentary team. During the Cruiserweight Classic, Mauro Ranallo was able to keep up with the speed of the action. On Raw, it seems they had to slow down the action so that Michael Cole can keep up with it. Do you think if Raw had a commentator that could keep up with the action, that the Cruiserweights would be better accepted? Well, I don't know if I buy that. I think Michael Cole hasn't been the problem at all, other than the fact that he may not be as knowledgeable about the moves. He isn't as knowledgeable about the moves as Mauro Ranallo is. I haven't been watching the Cruiserweight division on Raw the last month and been like, oh man, if only Michael Cole weren't out there, it'd be so much better. I'm sure it would be better if they would have just kept Mauro Ranallo and Daniel Bryan. You know, why they didn't put the Cruiserweights on SmackDown, I guess I know why. They have 3 hours of Raw. They only have 2 hours of SmackDown. And Bryan is the GM, so it's not like he'd be out there doing commentary, but it's just that does take away from the feel of it, because the commentary that they had was perfect. And I mean, I know some people didn't like Daniel Bryan. They thought he was over the top and everything. I loved it just because he came off as like a real fan. But, you know, when he would interject something like his history with Kendrick or whatever, I thought it was pretty cool. I don't think the commentary is what's doing it, though. I think that's wrong. And I think it has everything to do with just these stories so far, and the fact that they clearly had these guys slow it down. You talk about slowing down the action, you know, to make sure that Michael Cole can call it. Slowing down the action is the key word there. It's not as, like, frenetically paced as it was before. And I'm not saying the entire match from bell to bell has to go, you know, 85 miles an hour. But they've slowed it down to the point where whatever sort of energy and excitement it brought in the Cruiserweight Classic, and maybe Full Sail had something to do with that. You know, you had the Full Sail crowds, and they were into a lot of that stuff. But it's the slowing down of the action to me that's just killing this thing. That, and when you have, I wasn't digging that whole Perkins Kendrick story, and the acting in some of those backstage segments was just horrendous. That's not even WWE's fault. That's Perkins' fault. But that's what's killing it. I mean, that's really strangling it right now. I really don't think the commentary has a whole lot to do with the problems that they've had so far. I think they have at least Corey Graves out there. Corey Graves is going to be calling the Cruiserweight show on Tuesday nights. I think he'll do a fine job. Byron Saxton is whatever. I mean, Saxton, he's out there. You know, he doesn't detract much, but he adds nothing to the Cruiserweight division stuff at all. And Michael Cole, when they actually have him calling stuff and focusing on the action, I think is fine. You know, I mean, they may have him talking about other stuff, which is kind of annoying, but that's just the nature of Raw and SmackDown. It's not going to be, you know, it's not a tournament anymore. You could talk about the tournament. You could talk about that kind of stuff. You can't talk about that now. I get that. But I think the commentary is a very, very minor piece of the problem right now. So I wouldn't say that at all. Craig Brown. Happy birthday, Craig. I just wanted to get your thoughts on Daniel Bryan versus Brock Lesnar that was supposed to happen at SummerSlam 2014. Now we know Cena was completely dominated by Brock, but let's say it was Bryan going in as champion and he got beat the same way that John Cena did. Do you think that it would have went over just as well, or do you think that it would have hurt Brock a bit? People saw Bryan as a major babyface, but Lesnar was pretty up there with him in terms of popularity. Now, I disagree. I think that if anything, it would have made Brock Lesnar even more hated, because people didn't love John Cena, right? What they loved was seeing John Cena get beat. What they loved was seeing John Cena get suplexed 16 times. That's what they loved. And then the finish was just shocking. I mean, there were people with their mouths wide open. They couldn't believe, not just that Cena lost, but that he lost in the way that he did. He was jobbed out on that show. And it was great. Now, Brian was legitimately beloved by the audience. Maybe by now, if he didn't get hurt and he was still wrestling, the fans can be so fickle, by now they'd probably be booing him. But back then, they loved this guy. This guy could do no wrong. So, if he goes into that match and gets slaughtered by Brock Lesnar, believe me, people are gonna hate Lesnar. When Lesnar ended the streak, people hated him for it. That's the only time that Lesnar, even after that, would get booed, is when Heyman would remind them, oh, he broke the Undertaker's streak, and then boo. But then for the rest of the promo, they'd cheer the guy. So, had he obliterated Bryan, I think it would have been great heel heat for him. He still would have been, you know, popular. But Brock was never supposed to be a babyface. It just sort of happened that way. He never did anything to make himself a... But what did Brock Lesnar do to make himself a babyface? You know what I mean? Like, he never changed in the last 2-3 years. He never changed. He just keeps doing the same thing over and over again. But it would have gotten the people to boo him, which is what they should have been doing anyway. And that was the plan, by all accounts. The plan was for Daniel Bryan to go in there and just get absolutely destroyed. The only thing about that would have really pissed me off was, I still think that those two guys could have had an unbelievable match. I think they could have had a WrestleMania main event level match. I know people have gotten a lot very tired and sick of the same shit in every Brock Lesnar match, and even I agree. I wish he would change it up a little bit. See, the thing is, he knows he doesn't have to. Right? Hogan was good at that. Hogan knew he didn't have to do too much here in this country. He goes out there, everybody knows his shtick, he hulks up, cups the ear, drops the leg, he poses, like he had that down to a science. But you watch some of those Hulk Hogan matches when he would go over to like New Japan, and he was like a different person. He's doing drop toe holds, he's doing all these fancy moves, he's brawling, he, you know, because he knew, okay, that's not going to work with this audience, so I've got to actually wrestle. Right? I've got to give them something more. What incentive does Brock Lesnar have to do more than he already does? He's got the easiest job in the world. He literally went in there with the plan that was pre-approved of taking his elbow and driving it into his opponent's head and busting him open and making him bleed all over the place. Didn't happen to him. All he had to do was just use the elbow. So, he doesn't have to do anything beyond that. He goes in there, he beats people up, he suplexes people, and he goes home. But if Brock Lesnar really wanted to, it's not like you forget how to wrestle. Brock Lesnar, you talk about NCAA, yeah, he was a great freaking wrestler. And even if you watch him on SmackDown in 2002, 2003, believe me, he was doing a lot more than just suplexing people. He still has it in him, but he doesn't have to do it. And so for Brian to go in there and get obliterated, 16 suplexes, thank you very much, see you later, to me would have been a colossal waste, only because I think the two of them could have had a tremendous match. And then Brock could have won. But why not have Brian fight back and get some big offensive moves in there? And you know what I mean? Like, you could have done so much with that. I probably would have been disappointed. You know, with Cena... We already saw Cena and Lesnar once since Cena came Lesnar came back, and I loved that match because it was so different. I don't know that there was really anything different that they could have done in that match that would have made me go wow. So I'm fine, you know, I was fine with how that went. But the Bryan thing, I think they could have had something special there. I think it would have been a waste to just beat Bryan down like nothing and not give him the chance to actually fight back and do the whole David versus Goliath. Like, John Cena against Brock Lesnar is not David versus Goliath. They're, you know, Brock may be bigger, but they're two big guys. They're both very strong. Like, John Cena is the opposite of Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan going in there with Brock, they are two polar opposites. That's David versus Goliath. That's the story I was hoping they would tell, and we never got to see it, unfortunately. But I think that, you know, had things gone the same way, if nothing, you know, the good thing is that it would have made Brock an even bigger heel. So I don't think it would have hurt you. You say, would it have hurt him? I don't see how. How does it hurt him? Muhazam from London, England. How legit was Goldberg's 173-0 streak? This number seems unbelievably high to me. Is it as exaggerated as WWE's WrestleMania attendance figures? Yes, it is. I don't know what the exact number is. People have tried to go back and track all the house shows, because I think they lumped everything in there. It's not just TV matches, it was house shows. But as the streak was going on, they were inflating, and these are not exact numbers I'm using, I'm just using it for the sake of argument, but Goldberg would be at like 80-0 one week on Nitro. And like the next week, his streak would be like 94-0. And you ask yourself, like, or even like 88-0. It's like, this guy didn't have six matches or eight matches in a week. You know what I mean? So even as it was going on, it was, I think, very clear to some people that they were exaggerating the numbers. So what the actual number was before he got beat, I don't know. It may have been over 100. I don't know. It definitely wasn't 173. I could tell you that. Phil from the UK. Should WWE have halftime breaks with the longer four-hour shows? Do you think it would be a good idea to introduce halftime breaks in the shows, similar to what they do during their house shows, which gives the live audience a chance to go to the bathroom or hit the merchandise tables? And for the people watching live on the network, they can cut to whoever is doing the pre-show and have them discuss the first half of the show, do backstage interviews, etc. You know, if you're asking me, like, what do I want? I wish they would go back to doing the 5-minute intermissions. Remember that? Back in the day? The old late 80s, early 90s pay-per-views. I don't remember what year they stopped doing that. It was probably, was like 1990. 1991, one of those WrestleManias. But they used to have, like, in the middle of the show, you know, Gorilla Monsoon would be like, all right, we're going to take a 5-minute intermission, and they'd have a countdown clock on the screen. You'd hear all the crowd, like, arena noise, the ambient noise in the background, but it would just be, you'd be staring at the logo of the show, and 5 minutes would go by, and they'd be back on the air. I wouldn't mind that. Now, they wouldn't do that now. You know, they have that whole pre-show panel. So yeah, they'd probably just, it wouldn't be unlike what they already do. Like, they already go back to Renee Young in the middle of these shows, and they talk to Booker T, and they talk to Jerry Lawler, and they talk to Lita, and they give their opinions, and they give their predictions, and then they move on to the next segment. So they kind of already do it. They already do it, dude. I mean, they may not put a countdown clock on the screen, but you already get, those kind of halftime segments. You just don't realize it. But me, I miss the 5-minute countdown clock, personally. Steve Sherman, I always hear Jake Roberts refer to the fact that it was his job to get the top heels ready for Hulk Hogan. This implies that Jake feuded with said heels immediately prior to them matching up with Hogan. However, when I think of all the babyface Jake Roberts feuds, I don't remember one single instance of this happening. Honky Tonk Man never had a run with Hogan. Rick Rude never faced Hogan. Andre had already feuded with... Actually, Rick Rude, I'm pretty sure Rick Rude had at least one house show match with Hogan. But yes, they never had a TV feud. Andre had already feuded with Hogan. Ted DiBiase had already feuded with Hogan. Bad News Brown only had one Saturday Night's main event match with Hogan that I remember, and that was long before Jake feuded with him. The model Rick Martel never feuded with Hogan, and Earthquake feuded with Hogan, but it was a year prior to his feud with Jake Roberts. Do you recall Jake actually springboarding any heels directly to a path against Hogan? No, I don't. And I've never heard him say that. I don't know what interview you're referring to, but the only thing I could think is, because I don't see any reason why he would, you know, I see no reason for him to lie about that. The only thing I could think is he may have worked with some of those guys off TV, like at house shows, back in the day, you know, not a TV feud, but he worked with them on the house shows to, in some way, get them, even that doesn't really make sense. I hear get them ready. It's not like he was teaching them how to wrestle. I hear get them ready, and it was feuding with them on TV, you know, as a way to kind of give them credibility. Maybe they beat Jake, and so then they go face Hogan. If that's what he means, I agree. I can't offhand think of a single instance of him doing that. I mean, I think, you know, in 86, he had the feud with Steamboat. I'm trying to think who else he may have feuded with in 86. 87, is when Honky hit him in the head with the guitar. He feuded with Honky Tonk Man. But like you said, I mean, those guys didn't immediately go on to a feud with Hogan. You know, and Jake feuded with Rude. He feuded with Andre. All the people you just mentioned. And either they never feuded with Hogan, or they did, but it was before, you know, Jake got a hold of him. So, yeah, I'm not really sure what he means by that. You'd have to just ask him yourself, I guess. Henny Bird, in England, buy or sell on switching CM Punk and John Cena's roles at WrestleMania 29. The Rock wins the Royal Rumble. Punk beats Cena at the Rumble and Elimination Chamber, prompting Cena to instead challenge Undertaker in a match for the streak. Punk beats Rock at WrestleMania and holds the championship until SummerSlam, where you can still do the Daniel Bryan authority angle. CM Punk gets his WrestleMania main event and a 500-day title reign, which may have been enough to keep him around for WrestleMania 30, where you can still do the Bryan triple threat plus Rock, Brock, and Punk Taker. Okay, so, no. The answer is no. I'm going to sell on that. Punk against Rock, let alone... And they did Punk and Rock at the Rumble and the Chamber, but Punk against Rock, let alone Punk beating Rock in the WrestleMania main event, is not something I would have done. It's not something in a million years that they would have ever done. Rock and Cena, I know why they did it. I mean, Rock and Cena was the bigger money match, and probably is still now the biggest money match in WrestleMania history. Right? Before it was always the Battle of the Billionaires, Vince and Trump, and I'm pretty sure the first Rock Cena beat that. I didn't need to see the match the second time. I was excited for it the first time. That's a big match. And I was disappointed in how the match went. It did not live up to my expectations. Maybe I had my expectations were too high. The second match was even worse. I thought the second match absolutely sucked. I was there for both of them. And I could tell you that being there live, that crowd was bored to shit for that second match. That was the one in New Jersey. So... I personally didn't care for and had no need to see Rock and Cena Part 2. Rock beat him in the first match. That was good enough for me. You know, what they say, once in a lifetime? Once in a lifetime was enough for me. But it was always part of the plan. Rock wins the first one. He repays the favor to Cena the next year, drops the championship to him, the passing of the torch. We've seen this a gazillion times before, and rarely does it ever work. But that's why they were doing it. You know, Cena was their guy. Still is, I think, in a lot of ways. Punk was never their guy. Punk was never going to be their guy. Now, what I would have done, since you asked, is Cena and Punk had that match on Raw like a month before WrestleMania, right? That really good match with the pile driver. I would have had Punk and Cena as the main event of WrestleMania that year. I would have done Cena and Punk for the championship instead of doing it on Raw. Make that for the title. And instead, do a match with Rock and Brock. Brock and Triple H, I know they had a match on that show. You know, I never cared. That's what I think of Brock and Triple H. It was always a dead feud for me. Always was. So, Rock and Brock would have been far more appealing. And then Undertaker, you know, what do you do with Undertaker? Maybe if they hadn't ended Goldberg's... Goldberg. Oh my God. Ryback, I swear that was not intentional. If they had not already ended Ryback's undefeated streak, they could have done maybe a streak versus streak match with Ryback and The Undertaker. If they didn't want to do that, or if the streak was already over, then maybe Chris Jericho. I have to say, you know, Chris Jericho and The Undertaker, I've gotten this question a couple of times before. You know, how come it never happened at a WrestleMania? Would you have wanted to see it? My answer was always no, because I just never saw it as being that big of a match. And to me, the outcome never would have been in doubt. Chris Jericho, like when The Undertaker was still undefeated, did anybody in their right mind, would anybody in the world would have bought that Chris Jericho was going to be the one to beat the streak? Of course not. So that match never had any real appeal for me. But just mapping this out now, you need an opponent for The Undertaker. If you don't do the Ryback match... You didn't have a lot of other options. So, Chris Jericho ended up having a match with Fandango, and a lot of good that did him, losing to Fandango at WrestleMania. I don't know that he'll ever live that down. Instead of doing that match, maybe you do Jericho and The Undertaker. And there you go. You have Jericho, Undertaker, you have Rock and Brock, and you do Cena Punk for the championship, and there's your top three matches for WrestleMania 29. It is now time to reveal the number one greatest promo of all time in our top nine countdown of the greatest promo slash interviews in WWE history. There have been some great ones on this list. I've had a lot of fun putting this together. It was hard because I had to leave a lot of them off. But this last one is the one that stands out to me above the rest. First, let's recap the eight that came before this. Number nine, Vince McMahon, Life Sucks and Then You Die from SmackDown in 2000. Number eight, Mark Henry, his retirement swerve from Monday Night Raw in 2013. Number seven, Bret Hart snapping on Raw in 1997 after his cage match with Psycho Sid. Number six, Paul Heyman's work shoot on Vince McMahon from SmackDown in 2001. Number five, Hollywood Rock in Toronto on Raw. Number four, Shawn Michaels' heel promo on Montreal on Raw in 2005. Number three, the CM Punk pipe bomb on Raw from Las Vegas in 2011. And number two was Austin 316, King of the Ring 1996, famous promo. Now, as some of you I know picked up on, there was a very specific reason why. Week after week, for the last 9 weeks, 10 weeks, I guess, if you count all the honorable mentions that we had last week, I have called this a list of the greatest promos slash interviews in WWE history. That was not done by accident. And in fact, you can call this a promo anyway. I mean, it doesn't really matter what you call it. I mean, promo is short for promotional. And this was certainly something that was meant to promote this particular character on TV and help get him over in a way that they had not done before this. So you can use either word. It would be appropriate. Mick Foley will go down as one of the greatest promo guys in the history of the business. I don't think anybody could really argue that point. Had I opened this list up to promos outside of WWE, his Kane Dewey promo from ECW would have easily been in the top three. I said that when I started this countdown. I mentioned Dusty Rhodes' Hard Times. I mentioned Kane Dewey. Like, those are the two that I singled out. They were non-WWE promos. That's the only reason why they weren't on this list. And we've seen glimpses of the Foley of old on Raw recently, but I would hate for any new fans to see Foley now and be like, oh, what's so special about this guy? You know, he just shouts all the time on TV and wears funny suits. I want people to go back and I want them to watch his work as Mankind, because for all the love that Cactus Jack gets, you know, Mankind is the persona that I miss the most. And it is his sit-down interview with Jim Ross from Raw in 1997, as Mankind, that tops my list of the best promos in WWE history at number one. This was a pre-taped sit-down interview that he did with Jim Ross. It was, JR had just done one of these with Goldust and Marlena. It was the first, I think, in what they had planned to be a series of these pseudo-shoot-type interviews. It really was just one long interview, but they cut it up. They divided it into four parts that aired for four consecutive weeks, a month on Raw. They aired these things May 19th, May 26th, June 2nd, and June 9th of 1997. For those who want to hit it up on the network and watch them all. I'm going to play the audio here for you in a second. I've edited it down only slightly. I mean, if the audio is 20 or 21 minutes total, I probably got it down to like 18, so I guess I did a poor job of editing. But when I went back to listen to the whole thing, I really didn't want to cut out too much of it because then it would take away from the promo. So I only cut out bits and pieces. So this thing is going to run close to 20 minutes when I run it here in a second. This was Foley's second year in the company as Mankind. He had wrapped up a great feud with The Undertaker. In fact, I consider Mankind to be Undertaker's greatest rival. More than Kane, more than Shawn Michaels, I mean, they may have had better matches together, but there was no greater rival for The Undertaker than Mankind. He was the perfect opponent for The Undertaker in every way. They had just rekindled their feud after Taker won the championship at WrestleMania. They had a championship match on the Revenge of the Taker show in April. And then came this interview. And up to this point, we really didn't know too much about the man behind the mask. All they told us was that he was deranged, he lived in the boiler room. This interview introduced us to a side of the Mankind character that we had never seen before. And JR was the perfect person to handle this kind of interview. I mean, for a lot of different reasons. JR, I just think of Vince and Lawler and Jim Ross. Jim Ross was the perfect person to do a sit-down, like, in-depth interview anyway. But given the relationship that he had with Foley and even behind the scenes in real life, you know, the role that he played in bringing Foley into the company, which Vince McMahon did not want. And he finally told JR, you know, Vince did, he said, okay, we'll sign him, but it's on your head if he fails. And you got to remember, we didn't see interviews like this on WWE television back then. And we're all spoiled now with all the, you know, the documentaries they do on the network and the specials. But in 97, again, that Goldust interview was the first time they really had done anything even remotely like this. And then along comes this one. And what it did was, it didn't just turn Mankind into a sympathetic babyface. And I don't know if, you know, that was their intention or not, but that's what it did. They created a star, is what they did. Before he was, you know, a superstar on the roster, they made him a star. They got him on that pathway to being more than just Mankind. Because now we had a little bit of insight into the mind behind Mankind, right? Into the person behind the mask, this Cactus Jack guy, Dude Love, man, all that stuff. For the very first time, they made him a star. Maybe not on the level of Steve Austin, but Foley became a big star in his own right, and you could trace it, I think, back to this interview. This gave fans that didn't know him from the Cactus Jack days a reason to care about this guy. He wasn't just some sick freak with half an ear who, you know, had a pet rat. You know, all of a sudden they added layers to the character. Even if parts of the story were obviously embellished, it was a mix of fantasy and reality. And I said this earlier in the countdown with the Bret Hart stuff. Some of the best promos are just that. They're a mix of fantasy and reality. And it helps that Foley is one of the greatest storytellers I've ever seen. Not every wrestler can talk the way that he does. Now, some background on this from Foley's first book. The original concept was pitched to him by Kevin Dunn. And the original concept was he would do the interview as himself, as Mick Foley, without the mask. So it wouldn't be Mankind, it would be Mick Foley. And Foley actually said, no, I prefer using the mask. I've kind of gotten used to it. I wear it for hours in advance before my matches. So I would prefer to do it with the mask. Obviously, he got what he wanted. And here's the most incredible thing about this. You're going to listen to almost 20 minutes of audio, lots of stories, lots of little details, and Foley claimed that, aside from him attacking JR at the end, which was obviously planned out, nothing was scripted. He ad-libbed everything. What he may have written down on a piece of paper the night before, and I don't know. But there was no script handed to him. He didn't have a word-for-word thing that he had to rehearse from or anything like that. He ad-libbed the whole thing. He came up with this in his mind. He had a plan, obviously, for what he wanted to talk about. I'm going to talk about this story and that story of when I was in school and when I was on the airplane. He ad-libbed the whole thing. Now imagine them doing an interview like that today. And if they did, finding someone as good as Foley who could pull it off. I say good luck with that. Vince McMahon was there in studio while this whole thing was filmed. He was watching in the background. And Foley said that when they were done, Vince came up to him and told him that this was the most captivating thing he had ever seen. It was a huge turning point in this guy's career because he knew that in that moment, he won over Vince. And that's not an easy thing to do. The same guy, the same Vince, who told Jim Ross, he's your responsibility, it's on you if you want to sign the guy, now was finally behind the guy. And Foley says that this interview is on his list as one of the three best things that he has ever done. Not just in WWE, ever in his career. So here it is, edited down only slightly. It runs over 18 minutes. You can listen to all of it here. You can find it on YouTube. You can find it on the network and watch it. I gave you the dates for the Raw episodes. Just be aware, the second half of the interview, more so than the first, there's a drop in quality, audio quality. That's just how the interview is. I guess it's just how it was filmed. This is pulled right off the network. So it doesn't get any better than this. What you hear here is as good as it's going to get. Here is JR's sit-down interview from 1997 with Mankind.
What do you think the biggest misconceptions are that the WWF fans have as it relates to Mankind?
That I'm a bad person? Jimmy, there's plenty of good reasons to hate me. I just don't want people to hate me for untruths and partial truths and rumors. You see, when I was a kid, I played cowboys and Indians. Now, who were the good guys? The cowboys coming over the hill to rape, pillage innocent women and children? I was always the Indian, Jimmy. I always stood for the underdog. That makes me a bad person standing up for what I believe in, and I guess you got me dead to rights. I'm a bad man. I was 8 years old at Minnesaukee Elementary School playing a game of kill the guy with the ball, which may even be an Olympic sport these days. And in chasing one of the other students, I made a leap for his legs, and the back of his foot kicked me in the lip. And I didn't know what happened. I knew it hurt, Jimmy. I knew it hurt bad. But all of a sudden, people started looking at me in a different way, like there was something wrong with me. I looked down at my Chicago Bears back in the days when they were 2-12 in the waning days of Dick Butkus. And my Chicago Bears white sweatshirt had suddenly turned red. And children were running from me, scared. I was bleeding. I was in pain. And I was loving it because I felt like I'd finally found something in my life that I could do better than everybody else. Handle pain. Someone said, "Oh, that's just vampire blood," and then saw the open wound from which the blood was flowing. I've still got that shirt, Jimmy, and I remember thinking, wouldn't it be nice if I could do something in my life where I could do this all the time? Get that attention every night. Stockbrokers can't do it. Teachers can't do it. The President of the United States can't bleed for a living. But pro wrestlers can. It's the first time that I realized that I had a calling in my life, and I followed it right down the line. That's all I wanted to do. My brother and I watched them all. Chief J. Strongbow, Bruno Sammartino, the Valiant Brothers. That's what we wanted to be. Then I broke his nose by backdropping him into his bedroom wall, and Mom said no more wrestling. But she didn't say no more dreaming.
Mick Foley continued to pursue his dream, but he paid a heavy price. The emotional scars of a strange childhood are still evident.
Tell my son when he gets to be 15 not to be the guy who eats strange things. I never exactly brought it upon myself. Other people in their cliques, for lack of a better word, they would gang up on me because I was different, because I acted different, looked different. They were throwing worms at me, Jimmy. Little wriggly worms they were throwing at me, bending down in athletic class doing my hurdler stretch, and there was a bombardment of worms being thrown at me. So what do you do to retaliate? You throw the worm back? seven or eight people. It's not the fact they were hurting me. They were wounding my pride. They were looking at me like I was garbage. So I picked up the largest specimen, Jimmy, and I sucked it down to show them that their attempts to hurt my pride would not be successful. I thought, Jimmy, that I'd shown them. But then, sure enough, the story became exaggerated, as everything in life does, and it no longer became, well, Mickey Foley ate one worm because some kids were picking on him. It became, Mickey Foley eats a plate full of worms every day. Do you think I got many dates after that, Jimmy?
Probably not.
Do you think girls wanted to kiss a boy who had worms on his breath? I'm a good kisser, but I never got the chance to show it. What am I going to practice on myself, Jimmy? I never had the chance to show the world that I could love and could be loved, because they ruled me out because I had a strange appetite for strange things. I'm not going to say I didn't accept money to eat other strange things, but the fact is the damage had been done, and I went through my entire high school days without date number one. You don't think that scarred my soul? Well, maybe you're not looking deep enough. It was 1983. And upstate New York, with its endless rolling fields, might be a nice place for a lot of boys. But not when Jimmy Snuka and Don Morocco were in a cage in October in Madison Square Garden. That's where I wanted to be! I didn't want to ride horses along a field. I didn't want to fish for trout in a stream. I wanted to be where the blood and guts were, Jimmy. So I put out my thumb, Jimmy. And it took 16 or 17 hours, but I made my way to the garden. It took just about all the money I had in the world, but I got a front row seat. And I saw the move that would change my life. When Jimmy Snuka came off the top of the cage, and I saw people stand up. And I saw people cheer. And I know I wasn't the only person whose life was changed in that arena. And I realized, Jimmy, that I wanted to do the same thing. I wanted to hear people cheer for me because of some act of bravery that I committed. I wanted to see people's emotions. I wanted to see children cry out of love for me and the things I could do inside a ring. I made a movie when I was 18 about myself, maybe as a type of escape, where I was a wrestler. And it's strange, the first time I ever met Shawn Michaels, you know him?
Oh, yeah. Very well.
He looked at my scarred and battered body. He didn't know me, but he knew the legend of who I was before. And he said, "Is this the way you always envisioned yourself?" Looking somewhat down on me. And I said, "No, you know, the strange thing is I always imagined myself being you." And he said, "You mean the champ?" I said, "No, I mean the girls, the jewelry, the tattoos, the love." So in my movie, I was not Mick Foley. I sure as hell wasn't Mankind. I was Dude Love. Dating back to my experience in Madison Square Garden, I decided I was going to do something heroic. I was going to do something to make people cheer for me. So I ascended up onto my friend's roof, and I dove off.
Ironically, Dude Love gave Mick Foley his first break. It became an underground hit and somehow wound up in the hands of wrestling great Dominic DiNucci. DiNucci admired Mick's guts more than his skill and took him under his wing. Every weekend, for the next 2 years, Mick traveled 800 miles round trip, eating and sleeping in the back seat of his 79 Ford Fairmont, still hoping to realize his dream.
I knew I wasn't ready to be Dude Love yet. Never wanted to be Cactus Jack. I figured, here is a horrible name for a horrible wrestler. And by golly, as soon as I get the ability, then I'll get that heart-shaped tattoo on my chest. I'll put those earrings in, and I'm going to get the girls. And it never really worked out that way, did it, Jimmy?
Not quite.
I guess nature didn't cooperate with me. Cactus Jack was supposed to be around for 3 months. He stayed for 11 years. What made Cactus Jack different was he just wanted it a little bit more. He was willing to go the extra length. He was willing to sleep in a filthy car in order to achieve his dream. He was willing to forego fun and romantic relationships to be the best. He was somebody in an era of bodybuilder physiques who carved out his own niche, said, I'm going to make it on my own style. Said, no one else is going to tell me what to do. I'm not going to dye my hair. I'm going to be exactly who I am, and I'm going to do it my way.
As the legend of Cactus Jack grew, so too did his affinity for pain. Concerned independent promoters soon asked him to tame his increasingly brutal behavior. But Mick Foley always did things his way. Instead of compromise, he left the United States to seek satisfaction in a bizarre, sadistic wrestling subculture in Japan.
And I walked out the first time I saw barbed wire strung up in place of ring ropes. And I said, I'm finally home. Mrs. Foley's little boy is finally home. And Jimmy, I kid you not when I say it didn't matter the match. I wrestled on beds of nails. I wrestled on 10,000 thumbtacks. I wrestled on C4 explosives. And the funny thing was, it didn't matter how mutilated I was physically. I healed myself spiritually. Because for the first time, I was respected. I'll go so far to say I was loved. People lined up and chanted my name, Cactus Jack, Cactus Jack. They sure as hell didn't line up like they do here to spit on me, to pee in paper cups and pour it on me. I had my dignity, and I'm not sure I've got it anymore.
Obviously, these matches in Japan were bizarre. They were dangerous, career-threatening. If I'm not mistaken, I see you've been rubbing your arm there a lot since we've been talking. Very significant scars there. Did those occur in one of those matches in Japan?
He shall strip his sleeves and show his scars and say these wounds I had at St. Crispin's Day. And the good story shall be told from father to his son. For we shall be remembered, we few, we happy few, we brothers. For he who sheds his blood with me today shall be my brother. It's kind of touching, isn't it?
A little Shakespeare. You're very well read, aren't you?
You see, Jimmy, it shows me that I'm not alone. There's nothing freaky about being proud. When I look in the mirror, you know what I see?
I'd be afraid to guess. I don't really know.
I see a life fulfilled.
The nomadic reign of Cactus Jack lasted nearly 11 years, but his fondest memory occurred aboard a commercial airliner, where his battle-ravaged body made an indelible impression on a fellow passenger.
I'm a coach-class person, but they took one look at my wounded face, my scarred and battered arm, my stitched head, my stitched hand, my stitched ear, and they bumped me up. The woman sitting next to me didn't quite understand that. She spent double the money and ended up moving back to coach to get away from me. She felt that much of me that she couldn't stand to be around me. And not a day goes by when I don't think of her face drifting to the back. And I stretched out in her seat, and I had the ride of my life. I was a deathmatch champion, and I had the ability to make people sick.
Why didn't Cactus Jack ever come to the WWF?
I would have set the WWF on a tier. So when you look at Mankind, you're saying to somebody, every time I put on the mandible claw, in my mind, that's Vince McMahon, and I'm saying, why didn't you take me when I was good? Why didn't you take me when I was young? That's where the mandible claw comes from.
Earlier you mentioned Shawn Michaels and how you would like to see Shawn Michaels end his career handing out chains in an arcade. Why the Venom?
Shawn Michaels, remember they were saying at one point, Shawn Michaels, a boy in his dream. I wonder, Jimmy, why didn't they ever say Mick Foley, a boy in his dream? We had the same dream, so why does he look like he does? And why do I look like this? You think that's unfair to want me to wish him a lifetime of misery? I don't think that's unfair at all. I think it's a perfectly logical thing to ask. And I'm not ashamed. I wish him and a lot of the WWF superstars nothing but personal trauma and tragedy in their personal and professional lives. Does that make me a bad person?
Have you ever been treated or have you ever been diagnosed with a multiple personality disorder?
You know, I thought we talked about this when I said I don't believe in doctors. I believe in the body's ability to heal itself. If there's something wrong with my mind, I think I'd be the first one to know.
Don't you think that it's about time in your life where you looked squarely in the mirror and accepted the personal responsibility for who you are? Don't you believe that you, yourself, have caused and brought on all these problems?
I think it's time for you to maybe start doing your damn job. I think it's time for you to end this facade of journalistic integrity. You know what you tell the people week in and week out? You say, look at mankind. I don't even know if he feels pain or maybe he likes pain. You see, you're a powerful man, Jimmy. You have got the ability to reach a lot of people, to spread the truth, and you neglect to do it. Let me ask you a couple of questions. What is it about pain that I love? You see, I feel just like every other person. You see that? It hurts. Is it when I can't get up? When my little boy says, Daddy, I want to play ball. And I can't do it? Is that where the fun starts? Is it where a doctor injects a 12-inch needle into the discs in my spine so I can wrestle one more day? Whoopee! Let the party begin. I can't believe you sit here and ask me those questions. Do I bring it on to myself? I haven't done a damn thing to you. All you've done to people is mislead them and let them think that I'm having the time of my goddamn life when I'm in pain. Don't you look at me with that smug look. You make me sick. A man of integrity. I want to smack you. I can't. I can't. I can't. I can't.
Jimmy. He's gonna need some help.
You know, I used to talk about how cringy those monologues were that Kane used to do on SmackDown in, it's like 2010, I think it was, where they'd play the dramatic music in the background, but, you know, that was because it just didn't fit with him being out in front of the live crowd. And plus, a lot of the dialogue with Kane back then was just ridiculous. Here, the background music, I think, really fit. And I love how when Foley starts to get angry there at the end, if you notice, the music just cuts out. I like the way they did that. I like that a lot. This was the world's first introduction to Dude Love, you heard there in this interview. They showed the video of him jumping off his friend's roof. The summer saw him then debut the Dude Love character on TV a couple months after this aired on TV. And he won the tag team titles with Steve Austin. Austin had been teaming with Shawn Michaels, and then Shawn got hurt. Or it may have been after his little backstage cat fight with Brett. When Shawn tried to leave, I was wondering, he tried to leave then and go to WCW and tried to cite, oh, unsafe working environment. And Vince is like, I'm not letting you go to WCW, dude. You want to sit at home for the next 4 years in your contract? You can, but you're not going to WCW. So Shawn was gone for a while, and Austin needed a new tag team partner. And Mankind, I remember Mankind would wear a sign around his neck every single week for like weeks and weeks that said, pick me, Steve. And eventually out came Dude Love, and they became partners. And then after WrestleMania, fast forward the following year in 98, after WrestleMania, again, Shawn Michaels is hurt. He goes away for a while. Who was the beneficiary again of Shawn being gone? It was Mick Foley. Second time. He got two pay-per-view main events with Steve Austin, both as Dude Love. The second of those matches being one of my favorite matches ever, the one at Over the Edge. And then the month after that, he was back to being Mankind again, back to feuding with The Undertaker. And they had a match, I think, may have been inside of a cage. I think something big happened there. I can't really remember. But no, there you have it. The greatest promo slash interview of all time in WWE history. Call it whatever you want. Goes to Mick Foley. So congrats to him. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that countdown. I know I did. I'm sure we'll do more in the future. I'm always open to ideas and suggestions if there's one I haven't already done. We do these countdowns from time to time. So I'll give that some thought, and you can too. I wanted to comment on this one other thing. There was a story that popped up this week about Donald Trump and WrestleMania 4. This is ridiculous. They had this story that some reporter had nothing better to do, so he went digging around. And I love in the article, it's like they went digging in the archives. Yeah, the archives, it's called the WWE Network, you moron. And they found WrestleMania 4, which was hosted at Trump Plaza, the now defunct Trump Plaza in Atlantic City. 2 years in a row, they had WrestleMania there. And I guess at WrestleMania 4, they found sitting with Trump, supposedly invited as his guest, even though Trump might deny that, some reputed mobster who's like sitting right there next to him. Like, this is supposed to be some kind of big story or big revelation at this point. Nobody cares. I think we have been so, we have been so desensitized this election cycle to just stories about pure bullshit. I'm not saying like illegitimate bullshit, but just bullshit nonetheless. So many things have been thrown at both of these people back and forth, that it ain't going to sway nothing at this point. I just looked at that and I said, hey, look, we finally got a WrestleMania mention in the news among all these Trump mentions. So I just thought that was a stupid story. But it does give me a segue here before we end to the election. Election Day is Tuesday here in the States. Our long national nightmare will hopefully finally be over at this point, that being the election itself. I, for one, cannot wait for this thing to be over already. And I made a prediction on this show about a month ago that Clinton beats Trump 301 to 235 in the Electoral College. Remember, you need 270 to become president. I'm not getting into my own politics or anything like that. I made a prediction. I looked at the map. I looked at the math. I looked at what states he's probably going to win, what states she's probably going to win, and then tried to figure out, okay, where are these other states going to fall on the map? And so a month ago, I said, Trump 301, or Clinton 301, Trump 235. I said this with the caveat being that a lot can change in a month. Well, here we are a month later, and I really don't think much has changed that's going to change the vote total. I think people have pretty well dug in with who they're going to vote for. My final prediction, so this is my official final prediction now for Tuesday, is 307-229 for Hillary. That's how I think this thing turns out. I just don't think the math is on his side. It's funny, you know, he talks about, I see signs on all the lawns and look at the size of my rallies as though that's supposed to be some sort of indicator. The math is all that matters. It's all about the numbers. God, I sound like that Royal Rumble video now they do every year. But 307-229, that's my final prediction. I can't wait for Tuesday to just be over. Whatever happens, I just can't wait for Tuesday to be over and done with already. I have had it. I am so done with this election. I was done with this election 6 months ago. Now forget about it. I am just beyond. I am beyond that point. And you know what's going to happen when this election is over? First of all, this is not going to end on Tuesday. Whoever wins, there's going to be some bitching and moaning from either side, or someone's going to contest something, and it's going to go on for weeks and weeks and weeks, and the cable networks are going to eat this shit up because they love it. It's great for ratings. But this is not necessarily going to be over on Tuesday night, not by a long shot. But I guarantee you, this happens all the time. As soon as this election is over, they're going to be talking about 2020. They're already going to begin talking about the next election because we can't get a break. You'll see. The chatter is going to begin right away. They're going to be talking about the next election. Can't stand it. Anyway, you can follow me on Twitter. @Solomonster is my handle on there. I'm closing in on 20,000 followers. I don't know how many I'm away. I think I'm like 80 or 90 away now. So if you're not following me on there, perhaps you could be one of the people that helps put me over the hump. So follow me on there. You could also vote in our polls every single week. I put one up after Raw. Thumbs up, thumbs down. I'll do the same for Survivor Series in a few weeks. I remember Survivor Series last year. People were not happy. The only thing I remember about that, I think that was when Reigns beat Ambrose and Sheamus cashed in, and people were pissed. And when people get angry, they vote. Which, hey, maybe that will be the case with the election on Tuesday. But I just speak for myself. I know in that poll I put up on Twitter when that show was over last year, I had like 4,000 votes, which is ridiculous. Yeah, people were not happy about that show. So I'll have a poll up for Survivor Series as well in a few weeks, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. The Solomonster is my handle on there. So find that username, and that's the official channel for all the Sound Off extras. You can subscribe there. Big shout out again to TV Tracks for all of his support over the years. You can check out his channel. And before we end, I just want to say one more time again, this was the 9-year anniversary podcast. That's a big deal to me because I didn't ever expect that I'd still be doing this show after 9 years. And already that means that we're heading into the 10-year anniversary next year, which is, I got to do something special for that. I don't know what. I'll have to think about that. But a thank you to, as I said earlier, Webmaster Mike, Noah Mark, Brian Blade, TV Tracks. I'm sure I'm forgetting some people, but all of you, most of all, for listening, for sticking with me all this time. You seem to like what you hear. I hope you do. And I hope you'll keep telling other people about it, because that's the best way to grow the audience, is to hear from a friend of a friend, and then they listen, and that's how you make a new fan. So the more people you tell, the more grateful I am. Of course, you could always make a donation. You can use the Audible link, buy a t-shirt. Might want to keep an eye out for some sales coming up in the next few weeks. I don't want to say anything more than that, but, you know, it's that time of year. And that's going to do it. So episode 469 will be next weekend. I'm trying to think, is there anything next weekend? There's no pay-per-views, right? I'm so, like, skittish now. Like, I feel like there's a pay-per-view every other weekend. I think we're safe. I think Survivor Series is the weekend after next weekend. I hope so. We'll see you back for a brand new podcast next week. Until then, be well, stay safe. Thank you for 9 great years. Here's to 9 more, and we'll see you back here for more Sound Off next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off. What?
This Impact show has moved so many times. It's got more fucking moves than Bruno Mars, this show does. Don't believe me, just watch. Impact started out on Friday, then moved to Saturday, Thursday, then they moved it to Monday. They got slaughtered, so they moved it back to Thursday, then they moved it to Wednesday, Friday again, then back to Wednesday, Tuesday, and now back to Thursday. It's like the Big Show of TV shows. It's turned 1,000 times already, and the only time people pay any attention to it is when it makes them laugh.
Solomonster Sounds Off.
Since 2007, the Solomonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster Sound Off.